I'm the last real man in pro wrestling, Silas Young, and you're listening to the Solid Monster Sounds Off.
If you look around the world, from PWG to Ring of Honor to New Japan, there is one name synonymous with excellence, and that name is AJ Styles.
The company I spent 12 years wrestling for, from 2002 to 2014, earning much of my fame and respect. With a WWE, talk about it! It is funny, isn't it?
No, they will never talk about that!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 446 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, here for Money in the Bank Sunday, June 19, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. I want to, first and foremost, wish a happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. I know we have quite a few of them who listen to this podcast, so happy Father's Day. One other thing I wanted to also mention here, because a lot of you have asked me, and I realize, I haven't really given any sort of update here on the show in a while. I just wanted to give an update on kind of my situation, because a lot of you have asked on the whole blood thing. Nothing's really changed. I have my next checkup on Tuesday. I do have this, as you saw on Twitter, I do have this $2,100 bill for a test that I had done last month, which I'm not very happy about. And that's with insurance, by the way. But it is what it is. Thank you, everyone, for your concern. Everything is fine. Everything is status quo. I will try to keep updated a little bit more often, but there just really wasn't anything new to report, which is why I haven't said anything. And I also want to say thank you to Silas Young from Ring of Honor for that little bumper there you heard there at the beginning of the show. That was very cool. I'm a big Silas Young fan. I was a big fan of the whole Silas Young-Dalton Castle feud, which went on for quite some time. Kind of like Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin, only it was good. Anyway, if you have not yet taken advantage of our Audible trial opportunity, you can still do so. Our link is still active, or if you've used it up already, you can share it with friends and family. audibletrial.com/solomonster. You can still get yourself a free audiobook, and you can sample the Audible service for 30 days at no charge. You have over 180,000 different books to choose from. They don't have to be wrestling related, but they've got a ton of wrestling titles up there, including JTG, who I've had on the show before. Both of his books are now up there and narrated by him, including his most recent one, so you can get on that. audibletrial.com/solomonster. And on the t-shirt front, I mentioned last week that, you know, by the time any of you listen to this show, there'll be a new shirt up in the store. It's kind of in the, you know, kind of following the whole For Life thing. Well, that shirt's not going to be going up, unfortunately. I was told there was an issue, and they will not be able to put that design up, which is kind of crummy because Justin, who's one of our t-shirt guys and a very talented guy, you know, went to work on that design. I thought it turned out great. I think it looks great. Maybe I'll put it up at some point on the Facebook page or something just so people can get a look at it. But unfortunately, at least for the time being, it will not be in t-shirt form. So I just wanted to give people an update on that so they're not looking and thinking, hey, where's the shirt? I don't see it. There's 26 other shirts up there for you to choose from, but unfortunately that won't be one of them. And on the t-shirt stuff, of course, you know this week is our PayPal Rumble, PayPal Rumble Dos, in the same vein as Ultima Lucha Dos. We're going to be doing the t-shirt contest, picking two winners. We're going to do it later in the show, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. We had a lot of people who sent in their names. I'm going to get to every single one of you. You're all going to get a shout out on here. And then we're going to hit the randomizer back on a random.org. They have their list randomizer. It's going to work the same way as it did last time. And we're going to pick two winners. And then you guys are going to let me know what shirt you want, what size you want, where I'm sending it to. And I will get those out to you ASAP. So stay tuned for the PayPal Rumble. We'll do that after the NXT review. And if you want to make a PayPal donation, of course, you could still do so. On thesolidmonster.com, the PayPal button is on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. So that is the place to go for that. Before we get going here, I wanted to address something up front. You know, people twisting my words is nothing new. I'm used to it by now. I swear, either people need to get their head examined or get their hearing checked. It's one or the other. 2 weeks ago, when Teddy Long returned on Raw, I talked about how I thought he had been made to look like a buffoon. I didn't call him a buffoon. I said he was portrayed like one. My opinion, that's what he came off as. It was more of an indictment on the writing than it was anything that he did. You know, not that he flubbed one line, but it was just more in general the way he was portrayed, especially later on in the show as the night went on. And I thought, you know, maybe that was by design, right? It wouldn't be unlike what they started doing with Mike Adamley. I gave Adamley as an example. When he first came in as an announcer, he was screwing up left and right, and after a while they became self-aware. This guy's a meme. This guy's a punchline. Let's turn it into something fun on TV. And they made him the general manager, and they very obviously started scripting him to look like an idiot every week, which he was doing a fine job of himself before they decided to turn it into a gimmick. I give you Jeff Harvey, right, as Exhibit A. That was Adam Lee's very first night. I think it might have been his very first segment, the whole Jeff Harvey thing. But anyway, I thought maybe they brought Teddy back for comedic purposes. He's out there trying to book matches at one point, right? Even though he has no power and the security guards are escorting him out like he's some deranged person who escaped the mental institution. So then I get this clip sent to me from TV Tracks. It is from another podcast that Teddy is a regular on, the Gerwick Report. Good guys. We've corresponded before. I was always happy to help. But Teddy goes on this rant about quote-unquote other podcasts, and one in particular calling him a buffoon, and how it's racist, and just going off on the person for using a racist term, and on and on and on and on. And I hear this, and I think, boy, that sure sounds like it's directed at me. I use that word. I don't know if anybody else did. I know I did. I mean, Trax even ran the clip from the podcast I did with the word buffoon in the title. And that's where I assume someone either told him, hey, you know, this guy called you a buffoon, or he just saw the word. I doubt he even bothered listening to what was actually said. Even if by chance he was referring to someone else, I felt compelled to say something about it because I used the same damn word. And now here's this guy claiming that it's a racist term, which of course it's not. And he says, well, the people who use it are bigoted, and they're part of the reason why there's all this violence in the world. I mean, you talk about reaching. Inspector Gadget with his go-go gadget arms couldn't reach as far as this guy was doing in that clip. I like Teddy Long. I don't know that I've ever said a bad word about the guy. I don't know him. I've never met him. I was only commenting on what I saw him doing on TV, which apparently you're not allowed to do unless you've done it yourself. I always love that argument, too. That's a fantastic argument. You know, I never played professional baseball before, but that never stopped me from criticizing someone on the Mets when they're playing like garbage. Apparently, you're not allowed to do that. That's the second lesson I learned. I learned that buffoon is a racist term, and unless you've done something yourself, you have no right to talk about it. You learn something new every day. The idea that the word buffoon is somehow a racist term is beyond ludicrous. It is no different than using the word clown or goofball to describe how someone is being portrayed, which is exactly what I was doing. I mean, would he have been happier if I said goofball? So instead, he pulls this racial nonsense. Anyone who's listened to this show, and you've got 445 episodes worth of content in the archives as Exhibit A through Z, anyone who has listened to me knows what a stupid thing that is to say. I have no idea what he's babbling about, but I have never in my life heard of buffoon being a racist term. I mean, is this what we've come to with this PC nonsense? Really? I also find it amusing how he talked about not caring what other people think and I'm not going to respond to you. And yet he spent 5 minutes talking about what someone else said about him. Or what he thought someone else said about him. Now, He also complained about having to block people on Twitter for saying racist things to him. That I can believe. I don't doubt for a second that Teddy Long has been called a lot of really nasty things over the years, and even in wrestling and other interviews. I heard him talk about having to deal with racism within the wrestling business, right on up to the very top names in the wrestling business. In his second book, JTG, I talked to him here on this podcast twice. And he tells the story about a certain legend in WWE getting hammered multiple times at the hotel bar after shows and repeatedly saying racist shit to him to the point that, you know, that person's wife had to pull him away and apologize for it. Now, I'm not going to say who that person is, but that sort of thing shouldn't be happening, ever. On that, I think we can agree. But I'm not going to let him lump me in with people like that. That's a pretty big characterization to make about someone. And if you're going to do that, you better be ready to back it up with facts. I find that far more offensive than anything else. So let's chalk this up as a misunderstanding and not pretend like this is something that it isn't. It was not good to be the king this week. Jerry Lawler was arrested early Friday morning in Memphis, along with his fiancée, Lauren, each on charges of domestic assault. The cops could not figure out who started it, so they arrested both of them. She's 27, he's 66. I don't know why, I thought she was older. Even 27 seems too old for the king. They've both since been released on bail. They're going to be arraigned tomorrow morning. She alleges that Lawler held her against the kitchen counter, hit her in the head, put a gun on the counter, and told her to go kill herself. He alleges that she came home drunk, scratched him, threw a candle at him, kicked him in the groin, knew where the gun was, I guess, and threatened to kill herself. And he said he was also trying to prevent her from leaving and driving drunk. And WWE wasted no time in issuing the following statement. WWE has zero tolerance for matters involving domestic violence, and per our policy, Jerry Lawler has been suspended indefinitely following his arrest. They would have looked like hypocrites if they didn't suspend him after what happened with the whole Adam Rose fiasco, so I'm not shocked by that. I would have done the same thing if I were them. Although the thing, you know, Adam Rose did ask for his release after he was suspended, and then they let him go. What will happen with Lawler? You know, I wouldn't be so quick to assume this is the end of him. I see a lot of people saying, oh, you know, this is the end of the king. He's had a good run. It's about time. It's over. I wouldn't assume anything. I would not assume this is the last that we're going to see of him. We don't know if Lawler did, you know, what he's accused of doing. We don't know what he did or didn't do. It's his word against hers. All I know is this is not the first time that Lawler has been in trouble with the law before. And at every turn, every single time, he comes out clean on the other side. I mean, this guy is Teflon down there in Memphis. He could probably go speeding down the highway at 120 and talk his way out of a speeding ticket. Charges end up getting dropped. People change their stories. Somehow, in the end, it always works out for him. And WWE inevitably brings him back. You know, Vince obviously must like him. They pay him a lot of money, I'm sure, to basically work one day a week. Assuming the charges get dropped and the two of them reconcile, I think he'll be back. This is not the end of the king. I don't think that this is the end of Jerry Lawler in WWE. But what this does do for now is it opens the door to moving someone like Corey Graves up to SmackDown as part of the draft, and having a Mauro Ranallo, Corey Graves announced team on Tuesdays, which I think would be a great idea. I think that would be, they would on day one become the best announced duo in WWE. Now, they have this fetish for having a three-man booth, which I think is just ridiculous. They don't need a three-man booth. It drags them, just like the third hour. The three-man booth in WWE is exactly like the third hour of Raw. It does nothing but drag the show down. It is unnecessary. Less is more. Now, I would hate to lose Corey Graves from NXT. I like him. I like him and Tom Phillips together, but I think that would be the move to make. Now, on Twitter, Rovert mentioned David Otunga's name when I posted a tweet mentioning Corey Graves. It was kind of tongue-in-cheek, hey, Corey Graves, welcome to SmackDown. I don't know anything about that, but, you know, he mentioned David Otunga's name. And believe it or not, David Otunga is in fact still employed by WWE. I know it's hard to believe. He just got promoted, in fact, from the Raw pre-show duties to being the announcer, I think, with Tom Phillips on Main Event and on Superstars. And so I asked, is he any good? I'm not going to immediately, you know, cast the guy off. I have not heard David Otunga do commentary. He's obviously very well-spoken. He's very articulate. He's a lawyer. I would expect him to be. So I asked, is he any good? And I was told, actually, yeah, he is. So it could very well be David Otunga getting promoted to SmackDown. And you know what? Maybe he is good in the role. Or maybe he grows into it. Maybe him and Mauro turn out to be a great announce team. But I think it's safe to assume that by the time this draft rolls around, there's a pretty good chance Lawler is not going to be part of it. But that doesn't mean he isn't going to be back. I've got to think he sticks around doing other stuff for WWE. Or maybe they slide him back in as an announcer somewhere else after this all blows over. Because they'll probably want to find some kind of on-air role for him. I think they've had him helping out as like an analyst on some of the pre-shows for the pay-per-views. Maybe he just goes back to doing that and he works once a month instead of once a week. I don't know. But I would not cast him off and say, this is the end of the King in WWE. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, they were awfully quick to cut bait on Jim Ross once, you know, JR gave them a reason to do so. Hulk Hogan, look at him. Biggest star in the history of that company. Well, him or Austin, but, you know, they pretty much excommunicated that guy. Only now are they even starting to acknowledge his existence a little bit. But he's still not back. But I have to think that Lawler is going to survive this. Unless something else comes out that we're not aware of, he's going to survive this. WWE made some big inroads in China this week. For any of our Chinese listeners out there, I know we have a few. They announced a streaming deal with PPTV to air full episodes of Raw and SmackDown only a few hours after they air here in the U.S. 400 million subscribers this PPTV reaches. They wish for 1/20th of that for their own network. So anyway, this is a big deal. They also signed their first Chinese talent ever to a developmental deal. This guy named Bin Wang, 22 years old. In the press release they put out, Vince McMahon said, or this is the quote that one of their PR people wrote for him, because that's how this works. He said, "Today's historic announcements further demonstrate WWE's long-term commitment to China." The country, not the wrestler China, who they clearly had no commitment to until she died. The partnerships with PPTV and venue operator Expo Group, as well as the signing of Wang, I don't know why that's so funny, will enable us to engage our fans in China like never before. So WWE, they've been trying to break into China for a long time now. UFC has been trying. Everybody's been trying. Shane McMahon, before he came back, he worked for a company called You On Demand for many years when he left. They were a streaming service in China. They might still be. And it didn't do very well, by all accounts. It's very tough. But you've got however many billion people over there. You've got this market that, if you can find a way to tap into that, you're probably set for life. So that's why everybody's trying so hard, and now they're finally making some inroads over there, and that's a big deal for the company. WWE has revealed all 32 names in their upcoming Cruiserweight Classic, which kicks off on July 13th on the network. There are a bunch of familiar names in there. Kota Ibushi is official. He's in there. I would think he's got to be the early favorite, him or Zack Sabre Jr., who's also in there. Drew Gulak is in there. Tajiri is being brought back for the Cruiserweight tournament. The Brian Kendrick is being brought back as well. He's in there. Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, Rich Swann, Cedric Alexander, who recently left Ring of Honor. He apparently had to slim down to 205 or whatever it was. So he did that, and he is in the Cruiserweight Classic. There's a bunch of other names, a lot of which I've already mentioned. I'm not going to read the entire list. Those are some of the bigger ones. TJ Perkins, of course, the former Manic from TNA. He's in there. Suicide Manic, call him whatever you want. He's a very talented guy. One person who will not be in the tournament is Amazing Red. Amazing Red was supposed to be in this thing, but he broke his ankle. He posted on Facebook some really nasty photos, I guess, post-surgery. It's pretty sick. So is Goldberg. Goldberg, I noticed, he had a chainsaw accident this weekend, I think, and he posted pictures on his Instagram. What the hell's going on here? Jesus. But yeah, Amazing Red's ankle is all messed up, and it's a tough break for him. You know, you never know when that door opens and closes, when it may open again. I hope he gets another shot. I've seen Amazing Red at a few indie shows recently. I mean, long after he left TNA. Obviously, he was in TNA many years ago. He's wrestled all over the place, but this dude can still go. I know he's getting up there like his mid-30s now, but he can still go, and I hope when he heals up that he'll get a shot to show what he can do, because it would suck if he missed out on his big break because of a fluke injury. In an interview with Sports Illustrated, a really long one too, mostly about his career, it's well worth going out of your way to find. Stone Cold Steve Austin made some news this week. He said in this interview that AJ Styles carried Roman Reigns in their two pay-per-view matches. He said Roman held his own, but those matches were all AJ, and he wishes they would stop beating him so much because they have a potential superstar on their hands. He wants them to give AJ Styles a run with the belt. So, what are my thoughts on this? I don't claim to know more than Stone Cold Steve Austin does. I would love to know, if I could talk to Stone Cold, what he looks for when he watches these matches. Because I'm sure what he's looking for and what he picks up on during these pay-per-view main events is very different than what I would see or what you would be looking for. So maybe he's seeing certain things that I'm not. And I respect the hell out of his opinion. But I think, here's what I think. I think he's being a little too hard on Roman, just a little bit. I don't doubt for a second that AJ Styles is the one who shined the most in those matches. He did. He was. There's no debate about that in my mind. AJ Styles went in there. He had two star-making performances. He was already a star, but he had two star-making performances, especially in that second match. I'm not saying the second match was better than the first, but that second match, this guy was taking bumps like, how he didn't wake up the next morning as a cripple, I'll never know. He was taking bumps, a high back body drop on the announce table. He was bumping around like Kurt Hennig used to do back in the day. Going out of his way to make that match something special, to make Roman look strong, to do all of those things. And it was both of them were excellent matches. AJ was able to take bumps and do stuff that Roman Reigns was not. Roman Reigns was not taking the kind of bumps in those matches that AJ Styles was. And AJ, it's not even like AJ's a heel. You would think, well, he's a heel. Of course he's going to bump around and bounce around. This was before the turn. This was babyface against babyface. But AJ, you could tell AJ was doing everything in his power to make this thing, you know, a freaking match of the year. And AJ Styles can do things in the ring that Roman Reigns can't. And Roman Reigns will never be able to do. And John Cena can't do. And John Cena will never be able to do. He may try. We've seen John Cena bust out a Code Red, right, a few times and stuff like that. I mean, hey, at least he tries. Doesn't necessarily look good, but he tries. But AJ Styles is you know, a one-of-a-kind performer. There aren't very many people like him. He is still one of the best in the entire world. Even at almost 40 years old, he can go in there and put on the kind of match that not very many people can do. And I would expect that AJ Styles is going to be better than Roman Reigns, because AJ Styles has been doing this for almost 20 years. He's got a whole hell of a lot more experience in that ring than Roman Reigns does. So when you say that he carried both matches, Roman held his own, but he carried both matches. I've seen Roman Reigns have great matches before. I've seen Roman Reigns have great matches with Randy Orton. I've seen him have great matches with Brock Lesnar. I've seen him have great matches with, what was the other name I was going to mention? Daniel Bryan. Those are the names that stand out to me. I've also seen him have some shitty matches and boring matches with Sheamus and boring matches with Big Show. There was one match he had with Big Show. I think it might have been at Extreme Rules that I thought was really good. But they had how many matches did Big Show and Roman Reigns have? And I would say the vast majority of them really weren't very good. They were actually rather boring. I have yet to see AJ Styles in all the matches he's had these last few months in WWE. I have yet to see a single bad AJ Styles match or a single boring AJ Styles match. He had great matches with Jericho. He was part of that great four-way on Raw the night after WrestleMania. He had two excellent matches with Roman Reigns. He's going to have an excellent match tonight at the pay-per-view with John Cena. They might even steal the show. I have no doubt that these two are going to go out there and tear down the house. And that, I think, is the big difference between the two of them. Now, maybe Roman eventually will get there, but he sure as hell isn't there yet. But I also think you can't just say, well, he was just a warm body in the ring. Roman Reigns was more than just a warm body in the ring. Yeah, he held his own, but you know what? He did a little bit more than that. So I think it's weird. Like, I agree with what Austin is saying in a way, but I also think he's kind of shortchanging Roman just a little bit. Roman Reigns is not, he's not a bad pro wrestler. He's not AJ Styles. He may never be. But I think you got to give him a little more credit than that. But yes, AJ Styles was doing things in there that Roman Reigns will never be able to do. And if it was somebody else, look, if they put Carl Anderson, if they put, you know, Luke Gallows in there against Roman Reigns, would you have gotten those two kind of matches? Probably not. Probably not. That's the difference maker right there. He was in the ring with one of the best in the world. But got to give him a little more credit than that. Now, in the same interview, Austin also said he wanted to see WWE give Kevin Owens a run with the belt. Now, of course, there's only one belt right now, although that probably is going to change very soon. But right now, there's only one belt. I like Kevin Owens, too, and I think he would do great. Just in terms of carrying himself as like a cocky, you know, heel world champion. I don't know if he'll draw. I don't know if he'll bring in new fans, but maybe he will. But I also would love to see Kevin Owens get a run with the belt. But it, like in the same interview, in one breath, I want to see AJ get the belt. Then he says, I want to see Kevin Owens get the belt. And it's like, dude, there's only one belt. Not everybody can get it. You know? So if they break up the titles again with this draft, then you have no excuse. I think at some point, you know, Kevin Owens is as good a candidate as any to give him a run and see what he can do with it. He's very entertaining. Obviously, he can carry himself in the ring, but even outside the ring, anything they give to him, a backstage segment, commentary, the guy is awesome. He's very entertaining. And I, too, would love to at some point see him get that chance, but until we have two titles, again, there's only one belt. Not everybody can be champion. So I just thought that was funny because I'm reading this and I'm thinking to myself, how many titles does he think there are right now? Now, the thing about Kevin Owens is, and we're going to get to Money in the Bank thoughts in a second, because he's my pick. I think he's winning the briefcase tonight. If you do this brand split and you have a SmackDown championship, let's assume they move him to SmackDown. It does become infinitely easier for you to justify putting the title on him. Because I think, you know, you split the brands. Kevin Owens, if he's not number one, if he's not A number one, he's A number two. Or A number, 1B, maybe. As far as top heels on the brand. It's not like they have this plethora of strong heels at the top of the card that can kind of carry the load. They really don't. Seth Rollins is a heel right now, but not really. You know, I'm looking at these vignettes and everything, and I can't wait to see him beat Roman for the championship. To me, that's the story that, you know, people want to see play out. So he's a heel, but not really. So who would be the next biggest heel on the roster? Chris Jericho? Alberto Del Rio? They don't have a lot of guys right now. Unless they turn someone. I guess AJ Styles. AJ Styles, I guess, would be one of the top heels right now. But Kevin Owens is right up there with him. So even if you're one of these people who are biased, he's out of shape. He can't be a world champion. He doesn't look like a world champion. You know what? At the end of the day, that matters less, I think, than it used to. But who knows? Maybe if Kevin Owens ever gets the title and they try to market him to the masses look at him and they feel the same way. And he doesn't bring in new eyeballs and numbers go down. Look, I don't know what's going to happen. But I can look at him and say, you know what? He's a guy that deserves a shot. Yeah, hopefully at some point he'll get that shot. What else did Austin talk about? He also criticized the booking of Nakamura at the Dallas Takeover show, which was Nakamura's debut. Having what he called a 50-50 match with Sami Zayn. I guess, yeah, since Nakamura was this giant star coming in, he feels it should have been more 60-40, I guess, instead of 50-50. I know what he's saying, but Sami Zayn is a star too. You know, not on the level of Nakamura, but he's one of the biggest names in all of NXT, or he was. And he's in a major match that weekend at WrestleMania, right? 2 days later. He's on the WrestleMania card in one of the big matches on the entire pay-per-view. He needs to be competitive in that match also. You can't have Nakamura go in there and squash the guy. So I would disagree on that. I thought the match was exactly what it should have been. Meanwhile, Nakamura hasn't lost a match yet. I would say that's pretty good. In fact, I was reminded of a question that one of you sent to me. Brandon, if you're listening, he sent me a mailbag question that I never did get to answer, asking, why is it that Shinsuke Nakamura never loses? Even in Japan, he says he went back and he checked throughout that entire run that Nakamura had there. He lost a whopping total of 22 matches. Out of something like 800 matches in his career, he lost 22 times. He's the Japanese John Cena, if Cena threw knee strikes instead of terrible punches. Point is, I think Nakamura has been booked just fine since he came in. He should be on the main roster, but I'm sure in due time, maybe in the draft, maybe not. I think he will get the call up soon enough. But then again, I said that about Finn Balor, and that was, what, 2 years ago now? So you never really know how long they're going to keep you down there for. But I think he's been booked fine since he came in. And I think also, by the way, when he does eventually make it up to the main roster, that's when you're going to start to see those 22 losses go up, because he ain't going undefeated for very long on that main roster. I promise you that. WWE Money in the Bank is tonight, live from Las Vegas, presented by Gold Bond. We've gone from the days of Karate Fighters and Sony PlayStation sponsoring these shows to Gold Bond, which kind of makes sense, I guess, given the age of the average Raw viewer is now almost twice what it was during the Attitude Era. Not quite twice, but close enough. They're already advertising this as the greatest Money in the Bank pay-per-view in history. And you know what? It's hard to argue that the top three matches, at least on paper, isn't the best lineup they've ever had for a Money in the Bank show. I mean, if those three matches deliver, if everything else doesn't, but these three matches deliver, you've got yourselves a thumbs-up show. So let's go through this card here. We'll start from the bottom, and we'll work our way up to the top. There's been a little bit of a change. We had some pre-show matches that are no longer on the pre-show. They've been bumped up to the main card. The pre-show match, the kickoff matches now, are the Lucha Dragons against the Dudley Boys. Why? I don't know. I'm going to go with the Dudley Boys in that match. Tyler Breeze and Fandango against the Golden Truth. Golden Truth, I don't think, has been winning very often. Although I admit I've only been half paying attention to the storyline. I figure they go over here. I remember Tyler Breeze and Fandango getting a win. I think a tag team went over them a few weeks ago. And I think since then maybe they've lost, like the heels have lost some singles matches. But I think Golden Truth goes over here. So they're my pick. Now on the main card we have Baron Corbin in the never-ending feud against Dolph Ziggler. Hey, at least they were bumped up to the main card, right? That's an improvement. Baron Corbin has to win this match. I guess working with Dolph is a good thing for him, but I'll tell you something right now. I'm looking at Baron Corbin and I'm saying to myself, why did they even bring him up? Why was he even promoted to the main roster if this is what they were going to do with him? He seemed to have more juice on the NXT roster. So I hope they have something for him, because this is a whole lot of nothing. He's just another guy on the roster, just floating around. So this feud has to end. There has to be an end to this thing. Hopefully this is it. And I would hope that in the end, the whole goal here is to give Baron Corbin a big win. So hopefully he gets that win tonight. He's my pick. We have Sheamus against Apollo Crews, also bumped up to the main card. Sheamus is the big bully, and Apollo Crews has been standing up to him. I'm going to go with Apollo Crews, another guy who's called up to the main roster and just feels lesser for it. He feels lesser for it. And that shouldn't be the case. I understand they want to build these guys slowly, slowly kind of weave them into the system. But again, if you didn't have a big plan for this guy when you called him up, then why the hell did you call him up? Other than just, hey, we wanted to call up a bunch of new names. It's stupid to me. These guys float around. They're floaters. If they float around long enough without anything to do, people are going to look at them as just, they're just kind of in that role. That's their role. That's their kind of lot in life here in WWE. And it's going to make it that much harder for people to look at them as a big deal down the road. You know, they say you only get one chance to make a good first impression. It's kind of the same logic here. So I hope, again, for Apollo Crews, they have something in mind for this guy beyond the Sheamus feud once this thing runs its course. Although I think this is their first singles match, I think, or maybe their second. So they'll probably drag this out for a couple more months. But I'm going to go with Apollo Crews. I think he'll get the win tonight. We have Charlotte and Dana Brooke against Natalya and Becky Lynch. I'm going to go with Charlotte and Dana Brooke here. They were building up tension already between the two of them on Raw Monday night. Part of me thinks maybe it's all part of a bigger ruse between the two of them, because I don't know why they would break them up so quickly or tease breaking them up so quickly after putting them together. I think there's more to it than that. I think Charlotte and Dana Brooke get the win. I don't see Natalya or Becky Lynch getting the championship match at the July pay-per-view. I don't even know what the July pay-per-view is. Battleground? I think it's Battleground. It used to be Fully Loaded, which I think is a better name. Now it's Battleground, or whatever the hell it is. They're going to need one more challenger for Charlotte before they get to Sasha, let's say, at SummerSlam. You know, I don't see them doing another tag team match back-to-back pay-per-views, so who do you put her in the ring with? You know, she already feuded with Natalya. Becky she already feuded with at the beginning of the year. I think Paige, who got a win over her on Monday, Paige would seem like the most likely candidate, so there's no reason for Charlotte to lose this match. That's why I think she's winning. We've got Rusev against Titus O'Neil for the United States Championship. At least they threw Titus a bone. I can't remember the last time Titus had a singles match on pay-per-view. Now he's got a title shot. He's not winning the title. I don't think. I shouldn't say he's not winning. I can't be sure. It is Father's Day. He is their Father of the Year. Who the hell knows? I still don't think he's winning. I think Rusev, yeah, they've done a pretty good job at rehabbing Rusev, kind of putting him back where he was before he got beat by John Cena at WrestleMania. He was the dominant United States champion with Lana in his corner, and that's what he is again. He beat the piss out of Titus O'Neil on Raw Monday night. He attacked him from behind. He laid him out on the ramp. He put him in the accolade. He wouldn't let go. Then he let go. Then he put it back on. I mean, this was an old-school, old-fashioned heel beatdown on the babyface on Monday night to try to get sympathy on Titus and to try to get Rusev over as this monster, and I thought it worked, at least as far as getting Rusev over as a monster. I guess it wouldn't kill him if you beat him and then had him win it back the next night, but I don't really see the need for it, unless you just want to go for a feel-good moment on the pay-per-view, which I guess they could do. But I think Rusev should keep the belt. I think he will keep the belt. We have a fatal four-way for the WWE Tag Team titles. The New Day defend against Enzo and Kaz, the Vaudevillains, and Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. Anderson and Gallows, I think it's time. They've been around for a few months now. We all knew eventually they were going to end up challenging New Day for the Tag Team titles. I didn't know there was going to be two other teams involved, but so it is. And I think it's time to put the belts on them. New Day, they've had a nice run. It's been, I think, almost a year with those tag team titles now. I don't want to say they're getting stale, but I think at some point you've got to take the belts off of them and have them chase after them, because if you just keep the belts on them and they beat every other team that there is, you know, that gets pretty fucking boring after a while. And Anderson and Gallows, they're a much more serious team. There's a bigger upside, I think, to them, and they're associated with one of the top heels in the company right now. I think you give them some juice by putting the belts on them, and I think tonight's the night. I pick them. I think they're going to win the tag team titles. We have the Money in the Bank ladder match. Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Dean Ambrose, Chris Jericho, Cesaro, and Alberto Del Rio. Now, I pitched an idea, which was not a prediction. It was just an idea a few weeks ago on Twitter about Dean Ambrose winning. This is before they were even teasing it on Monday night, that Dean Ambrose would win the briefcase. My idea wasn't that he would tease cashing in that same night, but he would cash in before SummerSlam in advance and say, at SummerSlam, I'm going to be added to this match between Reigns and Rollins. Because in my mind, okay, Rollins and Reigns are having their first match tonight. They're probably going to have a rematch in July. They can do a third match at SummerSlam, but what do you do to make that match different? Well, you put Dean Ambrose in there and you make it a Shield triple threat for the championship. So I pitched that as an idea. A lot of you were very receptive to it, provided that Ambrose wins, which he's not. So I'm sorry to say. And I think that would be great. I would not be against that at all. I think it would be stupid, obviously, to have him win the briefcase and cash it in and blow off the first three-way between them on the same night. I would do it at SummerSlam. Frankly, I wish they would do it at WrestleMania, but that's a long ways off. That's a long way away. A lot can happen between now and WrestleMania. SummerSlam, I think, would be a good place for it. But that wasn't a prediction. My prediction was many weeks ago, I made an early prediction that I thought Kevin Owens would win the Money in the Bank briefcase. And I'm going to stick to that prediction. I'm not going to change my mind. I think Kevin Owens is going to win the briefcase. Kevin Owens has been eating a lot of pinfalls lately on TV. Dean Ambrose. It's almost like the roles have been reversed. At one point, it looked like they were kind of protecting Kevin Owens. This guy wasn't getting pinned very often. Dean Ambrose was getting beat left, right, and center. Upside down, inside out. Now, all of a sudden, Dean Ambrose has back-to-back pay-per-view wins over Chris Jericho. I think he even pinned Kevin Owens on Raw last week. Actually, no, he pinned Chris Jericho, but I know he's pinned Kevin Owens in recent weeks. Kevin Owens is the one who's been eating a lot of falls. Usually, that's a sign that that person, well, we can beat them because they're going to win the title or they're going to win the briefcase. I think Kevin Owens is going to win it. I think he's going to win it. I think he's a fine choice. And if they do split the brands and they do split the belts, it's like I was talking about before. You know, Steve Austin would like to see Kevin Owens get a run with the belt. I think it makes it that much more likely that he does if he cashes in. You know, he'll do the old heel cash in when the champion is vulnerable. He'll win it that way. I think that's what's going to happen. So Kevin Owens is my pick. But you can't go wrong with anybody in this match. Obviously, you don't want Del Rio to win. He's already won it, and he's, you know, freaking boring right now. Cesaro? Yeah, Cesaro would be an interesting choice. Obviously, I'm a Cesaro fan. I actually wouldn't put the briefcase in his hands. Chris Jericho doesn't need it. Dean Ambrose would be the next logical choice because then you can kind of tease that three-way with the other Shield guys. Sami Zayn, I wouldn't be against that either. But I think that would be a mistake. I think Sami Zayn, if you're eventually going to put the title on him or at least build him up for a championship match, you do it the old school way. You know, they call him he's the underdog from the underground, which is a terrible catchphrase. But I think with Sami Zayn, you take your time, you build him up as that underdog, you have him earn it, you don't have him walk around with a briefcase. Kevin Owens is somebody I can visualize him walking around with that briefcase. I can visualize him doing commentary at the desk, sitting his briefcase down, teasing that he's going to cash in, waiting for the chance to strike. It fits his personality. So Kevin Owens is my pick. And then we have the dream match. John Cena against AJ Styles for the very first time. Did they have a match on Velocity? Or I know AJ Styles had some matches for WWE in the early 2000s. I don't remember if one of them was against Cena. So I don't know. Technically, maybe it isn't their first match. For all intents and purposes, it's their first match. It's their first match as big stars. 15 years in the making, that's how they're building this match up. I think that it's going to be an excellent match. I think it's going to be maybe the best match on the entire show. I think they could easily end up stealing the show. One of you guys, Abe, tweeted me, said, Styles is going over Cena on Sunday. He can't go into an Austin podcast on Monday after another pay-per-view loss. Can he? So that's what Abe tweeted me, and that was an interesting point that I hadn't thought of. AJ Styles is being advertised for a Stone Cold podcast tomorrow night. And actually, that's interesting after what I talked about earlier and what Austin said in that Sports Illustrated interview. We'll see if he brings any of that up with AJ. But he's interviewing him tomorrow night after Raw. You would think, not that one necessarily has anything to do with the other, but you would think AJ could probably use a big win. He's had back-to-back-to-back pay-per-view losses. If anybody is overdue for a big win, it's AJ Styles. AJ Styles should win this match. I believe AJ Styles will win this match. He'll probably lose the next two, but he's got to get a win. And I think tonight in this first match, much like Cena and Kevin Owens last year, you got to give him a big win. I don't care if he cheats. I don't care if he does it all on his own. He should do it all on his own. I know he's a heel, but he should do it all on his own. He shouldn't have to cheat. He should get a big win to give him that credibility, and then they can have Cena beat him twice, because you know that's what's going to happen. So I'm going to go with AJ Styles. I think AJ Styles is he's going to get it tonight. And then the main event, Roman Reigns against Seth Rollins for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. They are billing this as 2 years in the making, which is something that one of you guys had written into the podcast, and you pitched that many weeks ago. The fact that the first time they were supposed to have a pay-per-view match, Roman got hurt with the groin tear, groin pull, whatever it was. The hernia. Now, I have to say one thing here, though, because they were talking about on Raw how we've never had a match before. I think Seth said to Roman, you've never beaten me, which is not true. They had a match on Raw, which was puzzling. 6 days before that pay-per-view match at Night of Champions they were supposed to have 2 years ago, they actually put them in a match on Raw. And they had a full match, and Roman beat him, clean as a sheet in the middle of the ring. And then he got hurt, and they didn't have the rematch on the pay-per-view. So not only has Roman beaten Seth, but he beat him on Raw. He beat him on TV. So that's not entirely accurate. But they did miss that first pay-per-view match. And then last year at Survivor Series, they were supposed to wrestle for the championship. And then Seth hurt his knee. And so that match never happened. So they're billing it as 2 years in the making, which makes it sound even bigger than it is. It's a big-time match. They said this could be a WrestleMania main event. I agree. This could be a WrestleMania main event. John Cena against AJ Styles could be a WrestleMania main event. You've got two potential WrestleMania main events here on the show. I'm telling you, when you look at the top of the card, it's a pretty loaded lineup here. It's going to be very hard for this not to be a thumbs-up show. And I put that poll up on Twitter after the show. I fully expect, unless the booking is just so whacked out, I fully expect that this is going to be probably a 70-30 show, thumbs-up to thumbs-down. There's really no reason for it, maybe even 80-20. There's really no reason for it not to be. I think Roman Reigns is winning. Maybe they do some kind of fuck finish or something. The fact is, Roman is not losing the championship. I'll go ahead and say he's going to win the match, but he ain't losing the title. So that is my, I know I'm making a bold prediction there. They're going to keep the belt on Roman Reigns, I know. But I just think, not that they can't take it off of him. They could and just have him win it back. You could always do that. Just like Rusev and Titus. You can have Titus get a big feel-good win on Father's Day and then have Rusev beat him for it the next night. But I don't think that's what they're going to do. And the only question is, what big angle could they do? Because if you're going to try to get another one or two pay-per-view matches out of these two guys, you can't just have Roman beat him clean every single time. That's why I think there'd probably be some kind of a controversial finish or a disputed finish, but Roman still gets the win. And that's your Money in the Bank card. Should be a good show. If ever there was a pay-per-view to check out, this is the one. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from New Orleans, Louisiana. Raw Instapoll. Almost 1,400 votes. 50% thumbs up. 50% thumbs down. 50-50. Just like they're booking. Unless your name is AJ Styles. Then it's more like 80-20. Raw got killed in the ratings. This was 1 week before the greatest Money in the Bank of all time. They got slaughtered. 2.03 rating. 2.96 million viewers total. So they have dipped below 3 million. Now, obviously, they were at least partially hurt by the basketball game. How much the basketball game hurt, it's impossible to know. Obviously, it hurt them at least a little bit. 20 million viewers that game did. Many of you mentioned that E3 was taking place at the time, which is their big annual video game trade show. I guess, you know, the alarming thing is that they've been up against the NBA Finals before. And this is what some people don't realize. This is not the first time that Monday Night Raw has been up against the NBA Finals or a big-time NHL, or not NHL, but a big-time NFL game. Because I don't think the NHL affects Raw ratings at all. The NHL does garbage ratings as it is. I mean, I'm not a hockey fan. I'm not going to sit here and bash hockey, but the facts are facts. The NHL, compare their ratings to the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, they don't do as well. And so I don't think something like the NHL would really affect Raw. But the NBA does, and the NFL does. Does E3, maybe it's possible. I don't think that there were enough people watching E3 that it would affect the Raw rating by that much, honestly. But the whole point is that they've been up against these things before. This is nothing new. Yeah, the NBA Finals is not a brand new event. E3 is not a brand new event. And rarely has the number dipped this low. You've already had near historic lows for the show on some weeks, and when you have events like these, and the Raw number plummets the way that it did, all it does is illustrate how much the numbers have fallen in recent months. The third hour is one of the biggest culprits. Not only does it make the show drag, it drags the rating down. This always used to happen whenever they would have a three-hour Raw as a special attraction. Remember those days? They would have a three-hour Raw every now and then. And every single time, that third hour would drag the show down. It would drag the rating down. If you chopped off the third hour, that number would go up. So now they're doing this every single week. And I'm telling you, that is one of the biggest culprits here. I mean, the numbers would still overall be down, but it wouldn't be down by as much. If you cut off that third hour, which sank like a stone, by the way, the overall rating would go up. It would look better. And when you have a mostly boring show, like this week, 3 hours is no fun. But I look at it like this. My new thing is this. We'll see how long this lasts. If I can find three things that I like on this three-hour show. So basically, one good thing for each hour. I can't give the show a thumbs down. That's kind of my new litmus test here. Even if the rest of it bores me to tears like it did this week, there were three things on this show that I liked. I enjoyed the Shield segment. I enjoyed the AJ Styles John Cena contract signing. Yes, a contract signing was the best thing on the entire show. And I enjoyed the Cesaro-Sami Zayn match, and in particular the finish of the match, which was awesome. It was a non-finishing move that Sami Zayn actually won the match with. How often do we see that? He won with a code red, a beautiful code red. Now he just needs to win a match with that blue thunderbomb. I want to give a shout-out to Kate Foray. She is a graphic designer who runs a site called the Raw Breakdown Project. You can go to rawbreakdownproject.com, where she puts together these awesome infographics each week about Monday Night Raw. Now, I only first learned about it a couple of weeks ago. You can give her a follow on Twitter, at MakeItLoud is her handle on there. I looked at her breakdown for the Raw New Orleans show this week, and I was struck by how little TV time was given to the women. For all that talk about a Divas Revolution, and they really started to make the women... They started to put them in these meaningful feuds and multiple segments and multiple matches. Remember they were putting two women's matches on the show each week? It was like, wow, we're finally kind of going in a different direction, and let's see how far they can take this. Well, that didn't last very long. Because it's not like this is a new phenomenon. This has been going on for a few weeks now, but it really, like, I'm looking at the infographic here, and it really struck me how little TV time was given to the women. They seem to be regressing to the point where I may have to revive my Diva stopwatch gimmick if this keeps up. They got less than 5 minutes of total airtime on this three-hour show. 4 minutes and 44 seconds, to be exact. 2 minutes and 28 seconds of which was an actual match where Paige pinned Charlotte. And that 4 minutes and 44 seconds includes matches, backstage promos, and recaps from the previous week. It includes everything. That's pretty bad. Now, theoretically, unless they just dump all the women on one show, which I guess they could do, I hope not, once the brand split happens, they should get more time. You would think that they would get more TV time. Now, what I'm left to wonder, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking to myself what the plan might have been had Emma not gotten hurt. Because if you remember, Dana Brooke was with Emma, not Charlotte. And they were feuding with Becky Lynch at the time, right? Emma and Dana were feuding with Becky, so they had their own thing going. I think the plan was for Sasha Banks to already be back on TV. When I say TV, I mean the main shows. To be back on TV, to come to Becky's aid, and you would have had Sasha and Becky, you know, not as besties necessarily, but partners, whether they're unwilling partners or not, against Emma and Dana. And that would have been the feud to kind of kill time or carry Sasha before she went and challenged Charlotte for the title, I think, at SummerSlam. As far as what Charlotte would be doing right now, I would think she would be feuding with Paige, especially given that Paige got a win over her on TV this week. So you have Sasha and Becky doing their thing against Dana and Emma. You've got Charlotte killing time with Paige. And, you know, in July or whenever, you could begin the feud. You could begin the build-up to a Charlotte-Sasha match at SummerSlam. So that would have been my guess as far as what we'd be seeing right now instead of the women's champion in a tag team match, a meaningless tag team match here on this pay-per-view. But they've got to start giving these women more time if anybody's going to give a shit about what they're doing. I mean, seriously, 4 minutes and 44 seconds on a three-hour show... You know, it's very obvious the women are not the priority that they were even just a couple of months ago. They aired clips throughout the show of The Shield, brought a tear to my eye, leading up to the Ambrose Asylum segment, one of my favorite on the show. This was designed to, build heat for the Rollins-Reigns match at the pay-per-view and put some heat on Rollins, get him booed, which did not work. But I have to say, like, I thought what they did and the way they kind of mapped this out was very clever. Because the three of them started to reminisce about all these great times that we've had in the ring together here in New Orleans. If you remember WrestleMania a couple of years ago, we had that very forgettable match with the New Age Outlaws and Kane that went barely 2 minutes. But they talked about it like it was some great match. And they talked about all these great moments they had in the ring. And Rollins is kind of getting in on it. He's like, you know what? You're right. We've had a lot of great moments in here. And he starts laughing and cackling. He's like, you know what my favorite moment was? And you can see it was coming. You could see where this was going. And I thought it was brilliant. And he just goes, my favorite moment is when I took a chair to the back of Roman Reigns and to the back of Dean Ambrose. I beat you guys down with a steel chair. You know what my other favorite moment was? Cashing in Money in the Bank at WrestleMania and beating you, Roman, for the championship. It was such a great heel thing for him to say. The problem is, it got him more cheers than boos. So again, I don't think it worked quite the way that they had hoped. But I still thought that was actually really clever the way they scripted that. It was a nice little swerve. I could see it coming, but I thought it was actually really well done. I will say this, though. Roman Reigns, he didn't have a lot to say here in this segment. He got booed at the beginning of it, but when he took the mic, he got all serious after Seth said his piece. And it was time for Roman to talk trash on the mic. I thought he did a great job. I thought this was the best Roman Reigns on the microphone maybe ever. I mean, he, you know, delivered it with he was serious. He looked like he was just about to kick Seth's ass on the spot. He said, you're the reason the Shield broke up. It wasn't any of us. It was because of you. And people didn't boo because I think people still miss the Shield. They like the Shield. And it was a great line to put in there because you got to remind people, this was not Roman's fault. This was not Dean's fault. It was Seth Rollins who broke up the Shield. So for all these people that are missing the Shield and they're very sentimental, they would like to see the Shield reunited, it was because of this guy. It was your fault that we're not a group anymore. And, you know, he says, I talk about how I'm the man. It's, you know, I'm going to be the man, not because I have this being the championship, but because I beat you. And he got a decent amount of cheers. I thought Roman Reigns was great here in this segment. I thought everybody was great. I mean, Dean got a little annoying there, but that's Dean. I thought they all played their role great. I thought this was a great segment. The people were into it. These guys are stars. You think of what real big stars have they made in the last few years, the last 5 years. I could probably come up with a few other names, but these three guys here, these are the main three. These are the guys that they took from nothing, you know, in developmental. You know, the mainstream audience didn't know who they were. Roman Reigns, certainly nobody knew who he was. I mean, you know, if you're an indie wrestling fan, you know, Jon Moxley and you know Tyler Black. But they took these guys from nothing and they made them into genuine main event level stars that you could see them have a match at WrestleMania in the main event and not think twice about it. Like, oh man, that's not a WrestleMania main event. No, actually it is. And it could very well be. And I think, I thought this was great. And Seth pushed Dean into Roman when the segment was over. Roman ended up nailing Seth with the Superman punch. Ambrose laid out Reigns with the Dirty Deeds. They did their best here to convince you that we might see Ambrose win the briefcase, cash in later in the show tonight, make it a triple threat. I still think, like I said before, I think you save that for SummerSlam. The only other takeaway I got from all this, including all the old Shield clips that they air throughout the show, is that the Shield was infinitely cooler together than they are apart. And that pissed off some people when I said that. They're like, I don't know, I think Dean's pretty cool and Seth's pretty cool. I'm not saying they suck. I'm just saying together as a unit, as a three-man group, they were infinitely cooler together than they are apart. That's just my opinion. I thought the contract signing with Cena and Styles was one of the best I've ever seen WWE do. I think back to other contract signings, and I can't remember every single one they've ever had, but I know most of the time they suck, and they're a waste of time, and I think I even pitched an idea once for them to do weigh-ins instead. And many of you pointed out, well, there's no weight classes, no weight divisions in WWE. What sense would it make? You know what? It just, I don't know, gives it a big fight feel. It's just something to do. You can get on the mic and talk trash. You kind of have the photographers crowding around ringside, these fake photographers that you can hire and just make it feel like a big deal. Anything is better than the typical contract signing that they do, but I thought this one was actually pretty good. This was one of the better ones. You know, we had Cena building this thing up like it was a dream match that could headline WrestleMania. He said, for 15 years, people have wondered what would happen if John Cena wrestled AJ Styles. Year after year, the decision makers in the company said he didn't belong, which I don't think speaks very highly to the decision makers in that company. Although, to be fair, they did have interest in Styles many years ago, and they even offered him a developmental deal. And he turned him down because I guess the money was shit. And his wife was, I think his wife was studying to be a teacher or something with her career. And so he didn't want to make the move to, I guess back then it wouldn't have been Orlando. It would have been probably Louisville, I guess back then. So they did make him an offer. It was many, many years ago before he became a big star. But just, you know, FYI. Then he mentioned, this was great. Cena mentions PWG. He mentions Ring of Honor. He mentions New Japan by name in talking about all the places that Styles has made a name for himself. Conveniently leaving out the 12 years he spent in TNA, which they better not do during that Austin podcast tomorrow night. You can't do a proper interview with this guy and not mention TNA. And I'm sure if it's up to Austin, he'll mention them. I mean, he mentions them on his podcast. But if they tell him he can't, that's just complete bullshit. So I'm going to be watching for that when I watch that podcast interview tomorrow night. But yeah, no mention of TNA here. Poor Dixie. Cena said this contract signing was going to be different than usual. He told Michael Cole to leave. I was hoping he meant from the announce desk, but unfortunately he just meant from the ring. Styles came out. Cena said there were two contracts on the table here, one for a straight singles match, one-on-one, and the other for a singles match, but with The Club at ringside in AJ's corner. He said if Styles signed that one, he would prove that he's a bitch. If he signed the other one, we could finally find out who the best really is. And Styles said if he had signed with WWE 15 years ago, John Cena would not be a 15-time champion, nor would he be in a bunch of crappy movies. Cena then talked about other indie geeks over the years and said that AJ's club wasn't full of bullets, it was full of bull. Styles signed the contract for a straight-up singles match. He told Cena that this indie geek was going to beat his Kmart shopping ass on Sunday. It's almost like the writers just scoured Twitter for every insult they could find against AJ Styles and John Cena, and they just put it all together and turned it into a promo. I thought it was great, though. Again, I like the fact that they're playing off reality with this thing and not ignoring it. This is what a lot of people say about these guys, you know, and even other wrestlers. Hey, it's AJ Styles, you know, he's wrestled all over the place, but until he's wrestled in WWE, he hasn't proven anything. You know there are people in that company that think that. You know that. Whether it's the wrestlers, management, you know there's at least a few people in that company that thought that when AJ came in. Oh, well, this guy might have been successful elsewhere, but let's see how he does here. And then Cena, I mean, people talk shit about Cena all the time, so again, they're just borrowing from reality. They're weaving it into the storyline, and I think that makes for the best storylines, quite frankly. And each week that he speaks, I think AJ Styles gets better and better with these promos. He's getting a lot more comfortable out there. Or maybe he really just thinks that John Cena makes crappy movies and shops at Kmart, and it's just very easy for him to tell the truth. Corporate Kane returned on this show. He submitted his resume to Shane McMahon and Stephanie for the general manager position on SmackDown. Of course, Kane once took a car battery and a pair of jumper cables to Shane's testicles, which one would think would automatically disqualify him from consideration. Surprisingly, it took Shane McMahon until late in the show to tell him that, so he was at least considering it. He also brought with him a letter of recommendation from The Undertaker. I would pay $100 to read a recommendation letter from The Undertaker. I would love to see what that recommendation letter says. Maybe it was the letter that did him in. Maybe Undertaker mentioned that time that his brother put him in a vegetative state. I certainly wouldn't write my brother a letter of recommendation if he ever put me in a vegetative state. I'd kick his ass. And then you think of what Undertaker did to their parents? They're a very forgiving family. It's been a couple of months now of this Darren Young, Bob Backlund stuff. I was a big fan of bringing Bob back. You guys know that. And Darren Young, pretty cool him. He pitched this idea last year. It went nowhere. And I don't know if he pitched it again or if a writer came back to him and said, hey, remember that idea that you pitched? We're gonna run with it. We're going to give you a chance to go and do something with it. And I thought that was cool. Now, having said all of that, my patience is wearing very thin with this stuff. To me, the most disappointing thing about all these vignettes that they keep airing on TV every week that all look the same and all sound the same is it's very clear what happened here is they got Bob Backlund into Titan Towers one day and they recorded all of these segments in one day in their studio. No creativity whatsoever. I thought we'd be getting skits after a while of the two of them at the arena or whatever city they're in. Like, maybe Bob would even manage him. And they would have earlier today, like they used to do that all the time during the Attitude Era and the Ruthless Aggression Era. They would go to other places and they would do these funny skits. I thought we were going to see that. And instead, all we have here is the two of them doing the same split screen every single week. Bob Backlund is one of the wackiest guys out there. You could have these wacky, vignettes of him training Darren Young. And they're doing nothing. They're doing none of that. I mean, for God's sake, put some effort into this thing here. This guy is a comedy goldmine, and you're not doing anything with him. If you use Backlund the right way, the guy is comedy gold. Either shit or get off the pot with this stuff already. I mean, I wanted to like this, but they're not giving me any reason to. Give me a reason to like this. They're also back to airing vignettes for the Shining Stars after their debut met deafening silence on Raw all those weeks ago. What was it, like North Carolina, I think they debuted these two guys. And, I saw, I think it was Meltzer. I think Dave Meltzer on Twitter mentioned that WWE the other day, like, they suddenly realized that they need talent for two rosters very soon, and they've apparently been making phone calls and outreach to a lot of past stars and 40-year-old guys to come back and help fill the rosters for the brand split. Now, Carlito is not over 40 years old, but I maintain what I said months ago before these two guys debuted on TV, which is that the Shining Stars gimmick is going to die a brutal death unless they bring back Carlito and they make them a threesome, like a trio, maybe to feud with the New Day. Carlito at least brings charisma. He brings personality to the group. They have none at the moment. There's absolutely no reason for anybody to care about these two guys. I mean, they're two talented wrestlers. Okay, great. Well, there's talented wrestlers up and down the card. We've got one ladder match on this pay-per-view tonight with six talented wrestlers. You gotta give us more than that. You gotta give them more than that. Give people a reason to care about them. Carlito, at least, he's a name from the past some people would recognize. He's got personality. It seems like trios and six-man tags and all that are all the rage in WWE, so they'd probably get a lot of TV time in six-man tags and whatnot. Maybe he just doesn't want to come back. Very possible. Maybe they've talked to Carlito. They said, hey, we want you to come back, and he's like, no. Or they lowballed him on money. Maybe they've tried. But if they haven't already tried, or even if they have, I hope he's one of the guys that WWE is trying to bring back for this brand split, because these guys... they were done before they even got on TV. They were done before they even started. At least he would give them a chance. By the way, on them reaching out to a lot of older guys to bring back for the brand split, I've seen Kurt Angle's name mentioned a few different times on different websites. I don't see how Kurt passes a physical myself, but you know what? If he can, I would love to see him back for a few big matches per year. Like a SmackDown version of The Undertaker. I think that would be a good role for Kurt Angle. But I saw he had a match with Zack Sabre Jr. at the Rev Pro show a couple of weeks ago, and even then, his knee is all busted up. He had like a 9-minute match with him. Apparently, people went nuts for it. I'm sure it was a cool match, a cool thing to see. But even now, I mean, Kurt's been out of TNA for how many months? He hasn't been wrestling that much, and he's got a knee injury. I mean, again, if he can pass a physical, then more power to him. I don't see how he does it, but if so, I think that would be the role for him. And lastly here, Dean Ambrose pinned Chris Jericho in the main event with Dirty Deeds before things broke down with all six competitors and Money in the Bank. They had Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn out there on commentary. Del Rio was the timekeeper. Cesaro was the ring announcer. Cesaro killed it. I thought Cesaro was the ring announcer was great. But should be a great match tonight. A lot of talent in there, and much better with six guys than with seven.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT this week, the Authors of Pain, with Paul Ellering opened the show. They squashed two dudes whose names I didn't get, beat them with the same Russian leg sweep clothesline combo they used on Jordan and Gable at TakeOver. Backstage, when the interviewer tried to get a word from Paul Ellering, all he said to her was, in due time. So they're going to carry this out for a while before we get the big promo and we get to learn a little bit more about these two guys and where they came from. Carmella beat Tessa Blanchard with her head scissors submission. They're now calling it the Code of Silence. This was okay. It wasn't a long match. Nothing overly special. I do enjoy seeing Tessa Blanchard. And probably won't be long before we start seeing Rachel Ellering again, too. TM61, who lost in their debut match a few weeks ago to Gargano and Ciampa, they used to be the Mighty Don't Kneel. That was their old name, which I think is also a cooler name. They beat the reunited Blake and Murphy, who may no longer be reunited after this loss here. They were trying to go it on their own without Alexa Bliss, which got chants from the crowd of, "Where's Alexa?" But it didn't work out too well for the two of them. TM61, just a lot of fun to watch these guys. I've only seen a couple of their matches here so far, but a lot of fun to watch. They did get the win, as I mentioned. They're great. Obviously, these guys are great wrestlers. They know how to wrestle. But they're also very animated during their matches. So I think these guys will go far. Bayley said that she has a doctor's appointment scheduled for this week for her knee injury, and she's hoping for a positive report. Well, so am I. In a rematch from TakeOver, Andrade Cien Almas once again dispatched Ty Dillinger. This was a more competitive match, a longer match, but the outcome was no different. Almas won with the knees in the corner. It's only been two matches so far. I'm not feeling it with this guy. I feel like this guy should be a much bigger deal. He was a big, big star before. You know, maybe I just have to see more of him, but I don't know. I don't know. I feel like they're going to have to, I don't know. They're going to have to do something with this guy. But should be like a big time. Like when Aries came in, obviously he was a much higher profile name because he's been on TV in this country before, but these other guys come in and it feels like a big deal. Although even Aries, I would say Aries also has kind of, that buzz has worn off quite a bit. But still, big signing for NXT. And this guy's a big signing for NXT. But I don't feel any buzz around this guy. He's not getting like big reactions from the crowd. He's not wowing people with these big moves. It's been two matches. We'll see what happens as he gets more under his belt. But I'm underwhelmed so far. Finn Balor was out, teasing that this might be it for him in NXT. He was milking the crowd reactions as much as he could. What's next for Finn Balor? He repeated this three times, by the way. It was almost like they were late on their cue to turn the lights out. I don't know. Maybe they were. Maybe they weren't. Finally, the lights go out. Out comes Shinsuke Nakamura. Nakamura says that he watched Balor become the icon of NXT. Which, you know, hey, Sting wore face paint, and he was the icon, and Finn Balor wears paint, and I guess he's the icon too. He said if he ever wants to become champion, he knows he has to beat the icon. The fans went nuts. They both shook hands, and the match is on. They didn't announce that it was going to be in Brooklyn, although I imagine that's where it'll be. But they are going to have a match. Like I said, Brooklyn would be an appropriate place for it, and I don't just say that because I'm going to be there. All right, so maybe that's a small part of it. But I'm wondering then who Samoa Joe challenges and defends his championship against. If this match happens in Brooklyn, then who does Joe face? Yeah, because unless we get Nakamura and Balor in July with some kind of a screwy finish, and maybe they do a triple threat in Brooklyn for the title, which would also be a kick-ass match, I would rather get two big matches out of it instead of one. So what do you do with Joe? I mean, Bobby Roode hasn't debuted on TV yet. Obviously, he's made his debut. He's going to be on TV very soon. I think in most of the matches he's had, he's been a heel, or some of them at least. I think he turned heel on No Way Jose in one, even though he got cheered for it. So I've said before I look at Bobby Roode as being more of a heel, and he should be on the main roster, and he could be a solid number three or number four heel on the Raw roster or the SmackDown roster. So if he is going to be a heel when he comes up, you're not going to do heel against heel for the championship in the main event of the next Brooklyn show. That doesn't sound very appealing. So what do you do with Joe? It's an interesting question. I suppose Hideo Itami is supposed to be back very, very soon. He had that shoulder injury. He had some complications from the surgery, but apparently he's on the mend. He's doing very well. I don't know if he's been cleared officially, but he's going to be back very soon. It could be any week now. And they could always go back to the story of who put him out of action, who attacked his shoulder, and they could attribute it to Samoa Joe. That was the same night that Samoa Joe made his debut, I believe. Was that same event where Itami was attacked in the parking lot. So they could bring back Hideo Itami sometime in the next few weeks and have him point the finger at Joe and say, this guy put me out of action. He took away a year and a half of my career. And you can have a Hideo Itami Samoa Joe main event for the championship at the next TakeOver show. And then do Balor and Nakamura. Or you could have Balor and Nakamura as the main event and have Joe underneath defending the title against Itami. I mean, either way. So Hideo Itami would seem to me to be the most likely candidate. I don't know that, but that would seem to make sense to me. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. So, with that out of the way, it is now time, or as Howard Finkel used to say, it is now time. I don't do it as well as Noah does. He does a pretty good Finkel impression. It is time for PayPal Rumble Dos. This is the second time we're doing one of these things. We had a great response to it last time. We have a great response to it this time. I want to thank everybody who donated $10 or more to be part of this contest. We are going to give away two free t-shirts here from our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. If you are one of the winners, what I will need you to do is get in touch with me on Twitter or email me and make sure it's noted clearly in the subject line what you're emailing me about. Once I verify that it is in fact you, you let me know what shirt you want. You let me know what size you want, if you want soft cotton or not, and where I'm sending it to. And I will pay to have these shirts shipped out to you ASAP. So without any further ado, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to read off the names of all of the participants here in this PayPal Rumble. And I am including names. If you bought a t-shirt from our store this month at any point in the month of June, even this past week since I announced the contest, you are automatically in. If you were kind enough to spend your money on a shirt from our store, it's the least I could do to show my appreciation. So donation or not, you guys are in here as well. I'm going to read those names first. Then I'm going to go into all the nicknames and get all the shout-outs in. And then we are going to head over to, it's random.org is the website. They have a list randomizer feature. I have all the names in a column. I'm going to paste all of those names into the box. And what we're going to do is they're going to number them. So being that today is June 19th, we'll say number 19. Okay, we'll do that. So I'm going to pick two winners. If you are number 19, you are the winner. And that's how we're going to do this contest. So I always mention that, like, how I do it and what website I use, just in the interest of full disclosure, just so everybody knows how this is working. So, without any further ado, let's kick things off here. Mallory Szymanski, Mike Castelli, Dalvin Brown, Justin Bishendesky, Carlos Cruz Jr., Jason Partington, Vercel Wells, John Belenda, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Misfit Miguel Mendoza, John Pipelayer Pog, I always laugh when I say that name, Dream Chaser Chauncey Curry, Temu the Tyrant, Asa Kanan, True Grit Tim Goggin, Nash the Gravedigger Degalado, Rolex Robin Party, Slingblade Shane McDonough, Pull No Punches Alan Ragasa, Brett Brickfist Brand, Zach Hardbody Harris, Malicious Intent, Michael Cuomo, The Reflection of Perfection, Abraham Lara, Keith the Conqueror, Krajnik, Mastodon, Michael Brown, Billy Hardcore Habibi, Luis Goldmine Gauthier, Brian Hitman Hurst, Fast Blast Tim Banks, Luis Hercules Hernandez, Case Closed, Aaron Klotz, Matt Game Over Gafferta, Judge and Jury, Justin Girardi, The Irish Assassin, Connor Grennan, The 5-Year-Old Firecracker, Evan Hernandez, Destruction, Jamie Dorsch, Hard to Beat, Daniel Belenke, Diesel Powered, Anthony Mitchell, Nathan Monday Night Raleigh, Deathblow, David Floyd, Jet Setter, John Peterson, Killer Kyle Federon, I said that right, The Scottish Assassin, Colin Kayer, CJ, Ring the Bell, La Chapelle, Demonic, Devin Laney, Chris Airbomb Bondi, Adorable Adamar Garcia, The Newport Nightmare, Adam Grendel, Soldier of Fortune, Umair Khan, Slice and Dice, Philip Kruger, Mass Mayhem, Javier Mitchell, Jonathan Killjoy Keen, Jerry Flapjack Flores, Russell the Muscle, Jacked Up Joseph Shaw, Anthony Law and Order Obasi, Brendan Loudmouth Lorbach, The Florida Freebird, Brian Becerra, Nicholas the Devious, DeSimone, The Shadow, Sean Ally, Neil Mad Dog Moss, Chris Killswitch Kukler, kind of a big deal, Corey Blake, the Massachusetts Mauler, Tom Nelson, the Winsford Warrior, Jack Hayward, the British Bulldozer, James Bevis, the Brooklyn Badass, Elijah Hamilton, the Plymouth Party Animal, Ben Chesters, the Bakersfield Brawler, Kevin Velado, Too Hot, Teddy Adkins, who wanted to bring to our attention a GoFundMe page that has been set up to help rebuild Northwest Ohio Wrestling. Apparently, early yesterday morning, two individuals set fire to all of their equipment. They destroyed everything. They have been a staple of the Toledo area now for about a year. They've done events for fundraisers and whatnot. They need money to help purchase a new ring. And so if you would like to help out, just go to GoFundMe.com, type Rebuilding Northwest Ohio Wrestling into the search bar, and the campaign should come right up. And finally here, David Delgado, who wanted to give a shout-out to his son, Noah, the Ultimate Warrior Andrew, who died at birth on June 3rd, but the doctors were able to use his heart to save the life of another baby boy that had been waiting for a transplant. I am very sorry to hear about your son, but I think it's great that David's son was able to give life to someone else's child. I think that's, you know, there's no better gift to give than that. So, again, condolences to David, and I am more than happy to give a shout out to the Ultimate Warrior here on this podcast. It is my pleasure. So without any further ado, let's pick our first winner here in the PayPal Rumble. There was somebody on Twitter who said, hey, can I pull somebody out of the Rumble the way that Hogan did to Sid at the Rumble in 1992? I said, sure, you could pull out Loose Cannon Lopez over the top rope the way that Hogan did to Sid. So here we go. We're going to hit the randomizer button here again. We're looking for number 19. If you come up here as number 19, you are going to win a free t-shirt from our Sound Off store. So here we go. Our first winner, the Scottish Assassin, Colin Kerr. You are a winner of a free Sound Off t-shirt. Shoot me an email. Let me know which shirt you want, what size, and where I am sending it to, and I'll get that out to you just as soon as I can. And now we're going to refresh the list here. We're going to get ready to pick a second winner. And the winner of the second Sound Off shirt here in this contest is Misfit Miguel Mendoza. Misfit Miguel Mendoza is our second winner. He comes in at number 19, so congratulations. As I said to Colin, you can send me the shirt that you want, the size, and the address that I can send to, and I will get that out just as soon as I can. So congratulations to Colin and to Miguel. They are the two winners here in our second ever PayPal Rumble. I'm sure after a while there'll be a third one down the road. But I want to thank everybody who participated. I want to thank everybody who made a donation, obviously, to be part of this. Some of you guys made a donation and included a note that, not that you didn't want to be in the contest, but you were going to donate anyway. We get a pretty steady stream of support, whether we do a contest or not each week. You guys are awesome. It's not an easy thing to do to get people to, whether it's buy a shirt or use the Audible link, which is a free thing that everybody should do, by the way, or make a donation. It's completely voluntary. It's completely up to you guys. And whether there's a contest or not, you have all been very supportive and continue to be very supportive of this podcast. And I just want you to know how appreciative I am of that, because we have a very engaged audience here. Even if you go on Twitter, as an example, and there may be people that have far more followers than I have. But if you look at the tweets and the polls that I put up every single week and the number of votes and the number of retweets and likes and all this stuff, I mean, there are other podcasts and other people and wrestlers and stuff, again, whose numbers are bigger in terms of followers, but they don't have nearly the amount of engagement that I have. They don't have nearly the type of engagement that this podcast has. And that's because of you guys. And so I just want to say thank you for being part of that. It's pretty freaking cool, I have to say. What a week for TNA. They held their first pay-per-view since October last Sunday, from the few of you who watched it. You guys seemed to enjoy it. And it almost didn't happen. That and the TV tapings. This could well have been the end for TNA. Their own COO and chief financial officer, this guy Dean Broadhead, he posted on his Facebook page, which he has since taken down, not the page, but the posting, that he had to secure interim financing within a 12-hour window in order for production trucks to roll for the events last weekend. He said that between Thursday and Friday of last week, he logged over 80 phone calls to attorneys, vendors, bankers, and employers, or employees, I should say. He got it done, but also said, maybe it's time to retire. This is a guy, in looking at his LinkedIn page, who previously worked for Sony, and yet it's TNA that has him thinking about retirement. Now, the interim financing that he mentioned is likely from Billy Corgan. This hasn't been confirmed, but Billy Corgan, only a few days before this, had been... there was an item on PW Insider that I first noticed. Billy Corgan, who has been with TNA for a while now, news came out that he is either now or about to be a minority owner in TNA. He is invested in TNA. Minority is the key word there because that means Dixie Carter is still the majority owner. This does not mean that they've stopped looking for a new investor or someone to purchase the majority interest in the company. That search apparently is still ongoing. They're still in discussions with different people as far as that goes. But it sounds like Corgan's money may have been what saved TNA's ass for the time being. He would not invest in ECW when Paul Heyman asked him for $1 million for 10% of the company. But he has given his money to Dixie Carter, so he must really believe in TNA. Tuesday night, they were supposed to have a live or almost live episode of Impact. Usually it's on like a 2-hour delay. And that almost live episode of Impact turned into a complete disaster for the company. Apparently viewers outside the U.S. saw the show just fine. It was just a pop TV issue here in this country. They had massive weather problems. I guess it was a thunderstorms that they had down in Georgia, which is where Master Control is for pop TV. Pop could not send the signal for the show to their satellites. So when the show was supposed to go on the air at 9 p.m., instead people saw a recurring loop of the same commercials for almost 2 hours before they finally resolved the issue. And then they aired the show in its entirety, I think commercial-free, at 11 o'clock at night, which means it would have gone off the air sometime between 12:30 and 1 o'clock. WWE, I mean, look, they had an entire pay-per-view knocked off the air after one match because of thunderstorms, and it only came back on in time for the main event. And then they had to offer refunds, and they had to redo the entire pay-per-view, or not the entire pay-per-view, but they redid the matches that people missed a couple days later. So this is not the first time something like this has happened. Why Pop TV couldn't just show an older episode of Impact instead of looping the same That 70s Show commercial over and over and over again is a question that only they can answer. Just remember, it could always be worse. It could always be worse. You could have gotten stuck with one of those old Montel Jordan Jackson Hewitt commercials. Right? Imagine watching that for 2 hours. Or any of the endless ads for boner pills. Those are always fun, right? Especially when you're eating dinner and you have to look at an old guy talking about getting his dick hard. Yeah, that's great. That's great. You know what? On that subject, cable companies, I've been thinking about this for a while. Cable companies, here's what they need to do. Because cable companies suck. We already know that. You want to make things a little bit better for your customers. Cable companies should start shipping their remotes with a no boner pill ad button. Okay, just a picture of a cock with the international no symbol over it. So that way, if you don't want to see them, you just hit that little button and it blocks any boner pill ads for the duration of the show that you're watching. It's ridiculous. I was talking to somebody about this the other night. They're everywhere. No matter what kind of show you watch. You watch a baseball game, boner pill ad. I was watching Wheel of Fortune last week. Wheel of Fortune, boner pill ad. Thankfully, I haven't seen them yet watching Raw. They should put on ads for Ambien during Raw. Might help keep their audience awake. So anyway, while Pop TV kept replaying the same three commercials over and over again, and people were blowing up my timeline about it, once I finally got home, because I actually wasn't home when Impact was supposed to initially go on the air, I'm seeing these tweets, I'm like, what the hell's going on here? When I finally got home, Impact was finally on the air. And I watched a few minutes of Impact for the first time in a very, very long time, many, many, many months. I stuck with it for a little bit. It was the Mike Bennett, Maria Kanellis segment. Two very quick observations here. One, Maria Kanellis cuts a damn good promo. I think Maria Kanellis is a better promo than our WWE champion, which is kind of shocking when you think about it. And two, Dixie Carter is no Stephanie McMahon. I thought that slap to Maria, my cat slaps harder than Dixie Carter did there. So once Dixie was throwing that weak slap and just Dixie being out there in general, I had seen enough. And I turned the show off, and I don't intend to be putting it back on. But again, I hear good things about, like, Bobby Lashley, for instance. I guess he's the champion again, and Bobby Lashley apparently has improved, and he's gotten better, and you still have EC3, and good, good. I hope that, at the very least, if you are a TNA watcher, I hope that they put a good product out that you can enjoy and that you can get behind, but I just can't do it. I do know one thing I heard. Although I didn't see the video they had for her during the show, but Gail Kim was announced as the newest inductee into the TNA Hall of Fame. Five-time Knockouts champion, the first ever Knockouts champion, in fact. Her feud with Awesome Kong, really that feud helped put the Knockouts division on the map for TNA. It was leaps and bounds better than what WWE was doing with the Divas at the time. It might have even been better than what they're doing with the women right now. Still a mystery to me why WWE let her go that first time. They did bring her back after her initial run in TNA. She went back to WWE, but she was very unhappy with the way she was being booked. There was the infamous Battle Royal on Raw where she eliminated herself pretty much right away. And I think they had told her, like, make sure you get out of there quickly after the bell rings. So she's like, all right. And she just eliminated herself and she walked to the back. She was just fed up with how she was being treated. And WWE didn't even notice that she had eliminated herself. She had to go tell John Laurinaitis backstage, hey, did you see what I did? I eliminated myself. And he thought it was funny. So that tells you what they thought of Gail Kim. So since coming back to TNA, she's been sort of the elder statesman of the division. I see absolutely nothing wrong with TNA honoring her. I think she's as worthy as anyone. It's no different than WWE putting Trish Stratus or Lita in their Hall of Fame. They were two very big players for the women's division over the years, and Gail Kim was the same thing for TNA. The Kong feud, and I think the matches also, I have to mention the matches that she had with Taryn Terrell, I think are her lasting legacy there. So when I was watching TNA for those couple of years there, full-time, every week, every Thursday, whatever it was, I would loyally, dutifully tune into TNA. And one of the things that I was a big fan of was Taryn Terrell, as she developed as a wrestler, the feud, the matches that she had with Gail Kim. It was great. It was a pleasure to watch Taryn Terrell go from someone that you would look at and go, okay, well, she's a pretty girl, but she's not a good wrestler, to becoming, I thought, a good wrestler. I really thought that Taryn Terrell improved a lot. And part of that may have been working with Gail Kim. The matches that they had, I thought, were shockingly good. And who knows how much better Taryn Terrell could have gotten had she not had gotten pregnant. At the rate things are going, I think Gail Kim may end up being the last inductee into the TNA Hall of Fame if they don't find a new buyer soon. But they got their interim money this week. At least that kept him alive for a little while longer. Lucha Underground. Lucha Underground was quite literally a one-match show this week. Pentagon Jr., King Cuerno, Johnny Mundo, Phoenix, Ibelis, and Taya in a 6-to-survive match, with the winner getting a title shot at Matanza at Ultima Lucha Dos. This was an excellent match. I think all of the one-match shows that they've had before have been excellent. They did that all-night-long match with Prince Puma and Johnny Mundo, which was basically just an Iron Man match. They've done a couple now of Aztec Warfare matches that I'm pretty sure were the only matches on the show. And they're always excellent. So Lucha Underground has kind of mastered the craft of doing these things. King Cuerno was the first one eliminated when Mil Muertes ran down to the ring. He speared him and powerbombed him into oblivion. That silhouette, that image of Mil Muertes running to the ring, once I realized who it was, because I couldn't tell who it was at first, one of the scariest things I've ever seen on the show. You don't want to see that guy running at you. Mundo pinned Cuerno at the end of the world, so he was gone. We were down to 5. Taya then pinned Ibelis after a Northern Light suplex. Oh, wow. That's the first time I've ever sneezed. Oh, man. Vince McMahon would fire my ass after that. Oh, man. Northern Light suplex. Roll through into a double stomp before I interrupted myself. So, Ibelis was gone. We were down to 4. Taya was out next after a package pile driver from Pentagon Jr. who does not give a fuck what you have between your legs. He will beat your ass no matter what. So Taya, though, I have to say, she held her own in there while she was in there. She kicked a lot of ass before she got beat. So now it's Johnny Mundo, Phoenix, and Pentagon. Started getting really old after a while with all the slaps, I have to say. But Matt Stryker made a great point. I have to give him a hat tip here, because he made a great point to sort of cover for it on commentary. I think he may have realized the same thing. And he just says, well, they're using palm strikes because they don't want to break their hands. And I thought that was very cool of him to mention that, because he said it just as I was thinking, like, man, enough with all the slaps. And it made sense, right? So somewhere in here, Johnny Mundo got pinned. I think he got pinned by both Phoenix and Pentagon. I don't remember exactly what happened, but Mundo was gone, and we were down to the two brothers, Phoenix and Pentagon. Brothers in real life, not on the show. Pentagon uses a brutal submission on Phoenix that looked like the old Charlie Haas, Haas of Pain hold, but Phoenix doesn't tap. Phoenix then turns it around. He uses another painful-looking submission on Pentagon. Pentagon then hits a Mexican destroyer on the floor. These guys were just kicking ass in there. Pentagon finally won with the package pile driver. He gets the shot at Matanza at Ultima Lucha, although it left me wanting to see more between Phoenix and Pentagon, quite frankly. So when this thing was over, it was about 45 minutes. You factor in commercials, probably 45 minutes. Whatever it was that it went. This felt like a war. That's what this match felt like. And Dario Cueto walks out with Matanza. Pentagon cuts a promo on him in Spanish. The fans chant Cero Miedo. And I cannot wait to see that match. Pentagon is just the best. I've raved about him from the beginning, and I am very, very happy that he is getting a main event on one of their big shows. It's time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Dave from Nutley, New Jersey, has not a question, but a follow-up on last week's Undertaker Hogan question, if you remember. This is what Dave says. He says, I believe Drew from Orlando was mistaken with the WrestleMania 6 VHS Hogan vs. Undertaker dark match bonus. And to be fair to Drew, it wasn't Drew. Whoever was in that What Culture video that Drew was talking about, I think the person just misspoke. So it wasn't Drew's fault. But anyway, he says, there was never a bonus match since I own the original VHS clamshell release. The VHS you're looking for is Hulk Hogan vs. The Undertaker from July 1991 from a tape called Hulkamania 6. Not WrestleMania 6. Pay attention to Undertaker's entrance as a young fan knocks off Undertaker's hat and Undertaker looks visibly pissed off as he recovers it. I understand it would be hard to find this match, but it's available on Daily Motion last time I checked. It is on Daily Motion. I do remember seeing this match. This is not a match that I've never seen before. I have seen it, and I remember laughing my ass off when I saw that kid. He grabs the Undertaker's hat and takes it right off his head. And Undertaker, you know, he's doing the whole stoic entrance. He has to stop and turn around and grab the hat, kind of glares at the kid, and then keeps walking. It was hilarious that they even kept that in there. So at least that answers the question. Hopefully that puts that to bed once and for all. Ryan from Cincinnati. What are your thoughts on the Damian Sandow interview on Talk is Jericho? He mentions the promo that you've talked about after Mizdow ran its course and how WWE failed to follow up on it. Yes, I have to thank you, because I had no idea that Jericho even did an interview with Sandow. I had missed that. It's a great listen. Everybody should go listen to it. He's just such a positive person. He never bashes the company. He does point out a couple of times where the decision-making may have been suspect, but he just did what he was told, and he tried to entertain as best he could. The old expression, take chicken shit and turn it into chicken salad or something like that. That's what this guy tried to do, no matter what they gave to him. And he seemed to be okay with that. But he specifically brought up the promo on Raw a few weeks after last year's WrestleMania. And that's another thing I argued at the time. What a missed opportunity it was to have Big Show win the Andre the Giant Battle Royal instead of having it come down to Miz and Mizdow. And pitting Sandow against Miz as the final two, not the final three with Big Show, and then ultimately having Sandow eliminate Miz and win the whole thing. That would have been the way to go. That would have been a hell of a finish to that Battle Royal. Instead, Sandow eliminated Miz, but Big Show still won. And you could hear the groan throughout the stadium when he did. Even Jericho seemed to think it was the wrong move. But I've always said that when the stunt double thing ran its course and they sent Sandow out there as himself with a live mic on Raw, and he cut this heartfelt promo that the people really were reacting to. They really did. They reacted to it. Only to follow that up by making him Macho Mandow, which I did think was funny, I'll admit, but they had something there with Sandow just being himself. You know, maybe it wouldn't have gone very far. Maybe just plain old Damian Sandow would have gone over like a wet fart in church. Who knows? But they never even gave it a chance. I didn't know that it was... Now, one thing I learned in the interview, I didn't know it was the Road Dogg who got him that mic time. Sandow had to go to Road Dogg and beg and just say, please, please, just give me a microphone. Because he knew. He knew the Sandow thing is done. I've got to move on to the next thing here. I think the people have a lot of respect for me. I built up a lot of goodwill with them. Just give me one shot. Give me a chance. Give me a live mic and let me go out there and let me speak to them. And Road Dogg went to bat for him and said, all right, you got your mic time. And they still put him right back in the comedy role the very next week. Even though I thought he went out there and knocked it out of the park. It might have even been the next night. Not even the next week. The next night, I think, at the SmackDown tapings is when he debuted the Macho Mandow gimmick. And on Jericho's podcast, Sandow seemed as puzzled as I was at the time. So what I want to do, I want to play the clip for you here. It's brief, but it's Sandow in his own words on Talk is Jericho.
But I knew, especially, okay, with the Brooklyn crowd, they were invested in me as a performer. They knew what I was doing. It wasn't just to do it and be this, mindless character that's just, no. It was done to entertain them. It was done with a wink, looking at them going, we know what's going on here. And they got it. So, you know, when I convinced, I remember I went to Brian James, and I was like, look, I go, there's all this talk about how do we get out of it. I go, Brian, all I need is a microphone, please. So sure enough, man, and Brian has always been a supporter of mine. And I think, you know, but both him and Scott are really, really great guys.
I agree.
And he said, all right, you got your microphone, let's go. We went on Raw, and I came dressed as me, and I just talked to them. I just said, look, you know, so-and-so, how many years ago, I wore a bathrobe, blah, blah, blah. And I forgot everything I said, but it was a very genuine, heartfelt promo. And then, Curtis Axel came down, because he was doing the Axel Mania stuff, and we got into it a little bit. And okay, segment went over well, fans appreciated it, cool. The next week, I was teamed with Axel dressed as Randy Savage. So I'm like, okay, cool. You know, not the direction I thought we were going, especially.
Right.
I mean, after the reaction I had gotten when I was just talking to them and being myself, like it was, again, a very genuine, heartfelt, like, and I thought I was like, okay, we're off and running.
You know, I said the same thing back when it happened. I said it just a month or two ago when he got released. And I'll say it again now. They missed the boat. After that promo, that was the time to let him sink or swim, and instead it was just right back to the goofball comedy. And it sucks too, because you hear him tell that story and it's obvious he was excited to get that chance, to get that opportunity, and as quickly as they giveth, they taketh away. But he comes across as a genuinely cool dude, and I wish nothing but the best for him. Jason from the Bronx, I've been watching the year 1997 chronologically on the network, as it is my favorite year in wrestling. I noticed a few of the wrestlers began to acknowledge Vince McMahon as an authority figure, most notably Triple H after he wins King of the Ring. I began to think, what if the MSG incident never happened and things went the way they were originally planned? I can't see things playing out any differently. I think Austin would have still been as big as he was, minus the 316, and maybe the Bret feud is not as big. What do you think would have happened? Well, they started acknowledging Vince as the owner, I think, even in 96, but I think back to the Royal Rumble. So it was right at the beginning of 97. I think two different times on that pay-per-view. I think after Undertaker loses to Vader, he goes after Vince at the announce booth, and Bret does after he gets screwed in the Rumble. So much earlier even than Triple H winning King of the Ring, they were very clearly bringing up Vince. And even in some promos, guys were mentioning Vince by name. So they were starting to do that earlier than that. How different would things have been? I'm in the same camp as you. There would not have been an Austin 316. So he would not have had that big catchphrase. He would not have sold as many t-shirts. I still think that's the highest selling t-shirt of all time. possibly of any kind. And yeah, he would have been missing that, and that was a big piece of who Austin was. But he would have come up with some other catchphrase. If it wasn't Austin 316, it would have been something else. Even if it wasn't as big, he still would have gotten over as a big star. He still would have been the guy they put the title on and they built around after WrestleMania 98. I'm with you. I really don't think things would have been that much different, you know, looking back on it today. I don't think Triple H would be in a completely different place than he is. Then again, you know what? With Triple H, like, Austin would have been the same. Triple H is an interesting one, because you can never really say for sure, I guess, right? I mean, we're talking about storylines here. And the whole point of, you know, him and Stephanie McMahon kind of hooking up, that was because they were put together as part of a storyline. And so as part of that storyline, they were working together very closely, and they became very fond of each other, and it just kind of went from there. If they end up not being put together in a storyline, you know what? Who knows? So I think in the case of Triple H, you can't really say that, I guess. Because one different storyline decision could have changed everything for that guy. You know, he still would have been a big star, but would he be, you know, the executive that he is now and the heir apparent to Vince McMahon? I don't know. I don't know that we can actually say that. But Austin, I think, would have been fine. I think Austin would have ended up exactly where he was. Matt, from St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada, do you think that Daniel Bryan could be the general manager of Raw or SmackDown once the roster split occurs? Absolutely. I think you could put Daniel Bryan in charge of SmackDown. You could load up... They're going to have to load up SmackDown. They want to make SmackDown an A show on Raw's level. If that's what USA wants, if that's what they're trying to do here, then you've got to put some big names on that show. And I think John Cena will end up on a different brand than Roman Reigns. I see Cena on SmackDown, personally. And probably AJ maybe goes there as well, but you've got to have other names. You've got to have other big names. And if they're talking to people like Kurt Angle, and if they're talking to people I heard like Goldberg, who, like I said earlier, just had a chainsaw incident, so he was in the hospital. He's got a little injury there. I don't know how that might affect things. But they're going to have to load him up, and Daniel Bryan is still a beloved figure. I don't know if he'd want to do it. I know he was spotted recently backstage at the NXT tapings. He was spotted at the Performance Center. Supposedly he's working with Nikki Bella as Nikki Bella prepares to come back. So he's kind of getting back in the wrestling groove. I know he bowed out of things over WrestleMania weekend. That got a lot of people worried. Oh, what's wrong with Daniel Bryan? He wants to, you know, take time off. I hope everything's okay. And I said at the time when he retired, you know, it's got to be tough for a guy like him. He can't be around wrestling. It's probably just too painful for him. You've got to let some time go by, whether it's a few months or a year, 2 years. And if he's starting to ease back into things, I think that's good for the wrestling business. I think that's good for WWE, because Daniel Bryan, I think, even if he's not wrestling, has a lot to contribute, whether it's just advice, if he's physically in there training people, if he's going to be on the air as a GM or an announcer or whatever. You know, he's a funny guy. He's a witty guy. I think he has a lot that he could contribute to the product, and people still like him. So maybe if he's on SmackDown, for example, that might make certain people more likely to watch SmackDown. I think it's a great idea. Armand from Maryland, I wanted to get your opinion on whether or not you see professional wrestling as an art form. Obviously, being a wrestler takes a lot of athleticism and physical endurance, but there's also a lot on the creative side of things that goes into cutting promos, getting into character, and telling a story that the people can get into. Not to mention the amount of choreography that goes into each match and the fact that every match is predetermined, similar to a dance routine. What are your thoughts about this? Absolutely, it's an art form. Absolutely. A lot of wrestlers call it that. It's like a dance, you know? Absolutely, it's an art form. The real art of pro wrestling, and I don't remember if it was Bret Hart, if I heard this from somewhere, but it's always stuck with me, whoever said it. And I think it's so true that the real art of pro wrestling is giving the illusion that you're hurting someone when in reality you're not harming a hair on their head. If you can convince someone that, hey, that looked real. Okay, I know all this other stuff is fake, but man, he looked really pissed off. Man, that punch, that looked real. If you can pull that off, you've done your job well. And it doesn't always happen that way, you know. You're not going out there to stiff the hell out of the other guy and hurt him. You only want people to think that. Every now and then, when WWE pulls off an angle that makes you go, you know, I wonder if that was real. That's part of the art form. That's what makes wrestling so much fun. Not to mention, you know, all the theatrics and the pyro and everything else that goes into it. When I took a theater appreciation class one semester because I had to take some stuff, electives or whatever, to catch up because there were a couple classes that I dropped because I just wasn't interested. So I wasn't interested in sticking around for a fifth year or a sixth year. I'm like 4 years and I'm done. I don't care what I have to do. If I have to double up on courses, I took 18 credits one semester. I took 19 another semester. I had no time for anything else. And one of the courses I took was a theater appreciation class, which I actually really enjoyed. And one of the things that we learned about is the different types of staging and performances and this thing, theater in the round, which is exactly what it sounds like. But that's what wrestling is. It's theater in the round. Backstage segments and promos, that's a different kind of theater, but it's all part of the art form. So I think that's the perfect description for what wrestling is. It's absolutely an art form. John from California. I remember when you mentioned wanting to see Undertaker do Steve Austin's podcast, you mentioned his off-the-record interview from 2002, which also got me thinking of the shoot interview Jim Cornette did, where he mentioned Undertaker after his match at WrestleMania 14, wrapping his hands up and sitting in the gorilla position for the Shawn Michaels against Stone Cold main event. And after the match was over, Undertaker got up, he unwrapped his fists, and he hit the showers. My question is, say Shawn Michaels did not put over Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania, what could have been the consequences for Undertaker if he really was serious about beating the living shit out of Shawn Michaels after that match? Would he have been in the doghouse, suspended, or if Shawn really had Vince's ear at the time, do you think that there would have been a chance that Undertaker would have been fired? The only way Undertaker would have been fired is if he would have killed Shawn Michaels. If he would have killed him and he was dead, then unfortunately you'd have to fire the guy. Otherwise, Vince McMahon was never firing the Undertaker. Undertaker could have beaten him to a bloody pulp. At worst, he would have been suspended. I cannot envision a scenario in that circumstance, unless he literally kills Shawn Michaels, where Undertaker is fired. I don't think that ever would have happened. And even if he was suspended, I think it would have almost been more of a formality, like, look, you know what you did here, I've got to send you home for a few weeks or a month or whatever. I really don't think the consequences would have been all that great for The Undertaker. I think he had too much respect. He was the locker room leader. He was Vince's loyal, dependable warrior. The thing that I think would have really been a problem, though, is if you rewind 8-9 months, I think it was, to the summer of 97, and Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart had a little bit of a tussle backstage, a hair pulling fight in the bathroom, had to be separated. Both guys were sent home. Shawn may have walked out, and I think maybe they sent Bret home. They weren't on the show that night. Actually, Vince McMahon went on the air and mentioned what happened. Not in specific terms, but I guess both acted unprofessionally and they're not here tonight. So they had their little fight. And what happened after that, if I remember correctly, Shawn wanted to use that to get out of his contract because he wanted to go to WCW and hook up with his buddies in the NWO, Hall and Nash. And I think he met with Vince McMahon and he brought his father with him. And they had a meeting with Vince and Shawn said, I want out of my contract. And Vince basically told him in no uncertain terms, you've got something like 3 or 4 years left on your deal. I am not letting you out of your contract. If anything, you would sit home for the next 3 years or 4 years and do nothing. And so Shawn ended up coming back. But part of what I think he argued at the time was, these are unsafe working conditions. Like, Bret attacked me and I don't feel safe and I want out of my contract. And obviously, you know, Vince wasn't buying it. In this case, it would have been a little bit harder, I think, to make that argument if somebody actually beat the shit out of Shawn Michaels in the back. He could claim unsafe work conditions and probably get out of his contract pretty easily. Now, his back was all screwed up at that point, so it's not like he would have been able to jump to WCW and really done anything. I don't think he faked the back injury. His back was all messed up. So if at best, WCW would have gotten, you know, a good promo guy. But he was damaged goods at that point. And Bret was gone from WWE, and he didn't have the issue with Bret. But still, he could have claimed unsafe work conditions, and there would have been proof of him being beaten up. And that would have been a huge problem for Vince, because he probably would have lost Shawn at that point. Sean could have probably gotten out of his contract if he really wanted to and to take it to court and all that. And that would have been a big blow. Even though Sean couldn't go to WCW right away and have these main event matches, just having another star, losing another big name like that, and having Sean on the opposing show cutting promos and acting like a delinquent every week, it still would have been a bonus for WCW. I still think it would have ended up in a complete disaster. I've said that before. I think Sean staying with WWE was the best possible thing for him and for WCW at the time, because all that would have done is sped up the demise. Because Sean would have gone to WCW and thought that he was, you know, hot shit, but he would have been in Hulk Hogan's territory, and there's no way that Hulk Hogan would have allowed Shawn Michaels to get over as a bigger star than him. And it would have been politically a complete disaster, a clusterfuck of epic proportions, if you take Shawn's ego and you put that in the same locker room with all the other egos in WCW. So it worked out for the better. But no, I don't think Undertaker would have really been punished hardly at all. Shane from San Jose. For our podcast, I've been reviewing an old Attitude Era shows and pay-per-views from the viewpoint of a fan who did not watch during that time. Recently, I watched Armageddon 2000, which had the six-man Hell in a Cell match. Throughout the pay-per-view, there were interview segments with each of the participants. One of these segments featured Undertaker reminiscing about his previous Cell matches. He would mention a match. It would cut to a flashback of that match with some ominous music playing in the background. At the end of each flashback, the music would just stop abruptly, and Undertaker would keep talking. The whole thing drags out for about 5 minutes. It is awkwardly long. All of the other interview segments with the other participants were normal. I found it hilariously bad and out of place, what they did with The Undertaker. That segment and the recent Matt Hardy Brother Nero video got me thinking about segments in wrestling with a so-bad-it's-good quality to them. What are some of your favorite so-bad-it's-good moments in wrestling history? So I started thinking about this when I pulled Shane's question for the mailbag earlier. And I've got two. I could probably come up with more if I had time to think. I mean, there's been a lot of so-bad-it's-good stuff in wrestling over the years. But there's two that popped up in my head immediately. The first one is the Edge and Lita wedding on Raw. I want to say 2006, I think. The whole Kane impregnating Lita and miscarrying because Snitsky, you know, fell on top of her. The whole thing was horrendously awful. That whole storyline was so bad. This whole storyline, but with the sight of Kane during the wedding segment, that face, that bald head coming up from under the ring, and the camera zooming in on his face, and that exact moment the priest yells, you know, Jesus Christ, like, that was funny. I will say that was funny. But even before the Kane part of the wedding came one of the most tasteless promos that you will ever see. Another one was the time, Big Boss Man read the sympathy card on the air to the Big Show after his father died. I still laugh my ass off every time I hear that. As I do here with Snitsky's poem that I'm going to play for you here in a second. I don't know what that says about me, but I laugh my ass off when I see these things. So Snitsky walks out on stage. He's wearing like a sleeveless tuxedo shirt. He looks completely ridiculous. But then again, I mean, he always looked completely ridiculous. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, for the gimmick, he had to shave his head and shave his eyebrows and had like no hair on his body. So he always looked very weird. But here he is. He's got a heartfelt poem that he wants to read to Edge and Lita on their special day. And the spitting. I got to mention the spitting. For some reason, he would talk, and then he would immediately spit like he had seeds in his mouth or something. So anyway, I found the audio right before I started recording this podcast. I pulled it off Daily Motion because I can't even say this myself without it sounding completely ridiculous, like in my own voice. And frankly, me saying it wouldn't do it justice. You have to hear this straight from Snitsky's mouth and then the reaction after he says it. So here it is. This is one of the more disturbing things, aside from Cole, JBL, and Byron Saxton on commentary, that you will ever hear on Raw.
It's not my fault you fell in love. It's not my fault it came from above. It's not my fault Edge and Lita chose this direction. It's not my fault
King can't get an erection. It's not my fault the things that love can do to us. Just like it's not my fault you had a dead baby in your uterus.
Oh my gosh.
That was very nice.
I mean, what do you say? What do you say after something like that? I think Lawler's reaction and the audience reaction just speaks for itself. And I love how the priest was like, that was nice. That was nice. So even Lita didn't seem too bothered about her aborted fetus. But I can't help but go back and watch this wedding from start to finish and think, this is so bad, it's good. So that's one that comes to mind. The other segment, believe it or not, is a TNA segment. And you guys know that I was no fan of Aces and Eights. Many a rant I went on this podcast and had to say about Aces and Eights. They are by far one of the worst, if not the worst, most inept faction in wrestling history. Yes, they are worse than Apple. Not the company, the faction in WWE. And I bet 75% of you right now are saying, Apple? I didn't know there was a faction called Apple. In fact, there was. Look it up. Aces and Eights was just the dirt worst. And that god-awful storyline dragged on for something like a year and a half or 2 years. It never ended. But when they died, TNA decided to play it up for comedy, and they had a funeral for Aces and Eights. And Samoa Joe was there. He was eating a bagel. Magnus was there. Mike Tenay was consoling Eric Young, who was constantly abused by Aces and Eights, but I guess he just gets very emotional at funerals. Otherwise, why would he cry for them? Kurt Angle was there. Mr. Anderson popped up out of the casket, and he said a few words about what it was like to be trapped in the group for so long. The entire premise of this was completely ridiculous, but the execution was incredible. That funeral is one of the greatest segments TNA has ever produced, even to this day. It is one of the best things that they ever did, one of the most entertaining things they ever did. My favorite moment was Joe. He had a six-pack of beer that he was going to lay down in the casket, but I guess he decided he didn't want the beer to go to waste. So he starts handing out bottles of beer to everybody in the chapel. And he goes to hand one to Kurt Angle, but then he thinks better of it and he pulls it away. I fucking died when I saw that, because that was probably around the time of one of Kurt's DUIs, so they were playing off of that. Not that DUIs are something to laugh about, they're not, but I laugh my ass off when Joe did that. When he just pulls it, he thinks about it for a second, he's like, nah, on second thought, I don't think so, and he just pulls the bottle away. Fucking died when I saw that. Kurt was corpsing throughout the entire segment. How he kept it together, I don't know. Mike Tenay, I think, he did a speech as well and did something with one of the Knockouts panties, or I don't remember all the details of it. I haven't seen it in a while. But what I do remember, and again, maybe I'm missing one or two people who were part of the segment, but again, Angle, Mike Tenay, Magnus, Joe, Anderson, even Bully Ray. Bully Ray came in there at the end. I'm pretty sure that every single person involved in that segment on camera is now gone from TNA. I don't think there's anybody left. I mean, I can't remember if James Storm was there. Maybe he brought the beer? If James Storm was there, he would be the only one. But I don't think he was part of that segment, though. I don't remember him being there. So yeah, all of them. All of them are gone. That's incredible. It wasn't that many years ago. It's not like we're talking 5-10 years ago. It's unbelievable. But whether TNA dies tomorrow or if it lives another 10 years, I don't think they will ever produce a segment more entertaining than that one. Everybody played their part just perfectly. Like I said, the premise of the entire thing, just utterly ridiculous. So maybe I'm stretching the whole so bad it's good thing, because I remember liking the segment back when it happened, and I still like it now. In fact, I'm probably going to go watch it again when I'm done recording here. So yeah, the idea was corny as all hell, but I thought they nailed it. Bill in New York, buy or sell on which WCW debut was worse, the Shockmaster or the Yeti? Oh boy. Well, you mean the Yeti. Got to get it right. Where to begin? I mean, well, we'll do this. I'm going to buy on the Shockmaster and I'm going to sell on the Yeti. If for no other reason, because the Shockmaster is a legend all unto itself. The Shockmaster lives on to this day. WWE loves playing that footage. Every YouTube video of like top worst moments or debuts or, you know, they always mention the Shockmaster. On the Edge and Christian show, they did a whole segment where they brought back Fred Ottman as the Shockmaster. And that was what, 1993? I mean, for God's sakes, that's like, what is that, 20-some-odd years ago? And this thing, this Shockmaster thing, nobody knows who the fucking Yeti is if you said to, like, a casual wrestling fan. But I think there are casual wrestling fans who probably would remember the Shockmaster. Now, both of them, they're very similar. I mean, the Yeti was, you know, a tall guy wrapped in toilet paper who walked to the ring and dry-humped Hulk Hogan. The Shockmaster tripped and literally fell on his face. His helmet comes off. The helmet itself is ridiculous. It's like a Star Trooper helmet in glitter. I don't know what they were thinking with that. Both of them were part of main event angles with top talent. I mean, it was Hulk Hogan. It was Hulk Hogan and the Giant when the Yeti came out to make a Hogan sandwich. And the other thing, it was Sting and the British Bulldog. Introducing the Shockmaster. This was not like mid-card comedy, Norman the Lunatic, like any of that stuff. This was main event stuff here. These were awful. Awful, awful, terrible, terrible segments and terrible characters. And whoever thought they were a good idea should have been fired the minute that they proposed them. The problem is, it was probably the booker. It was probably fucking Ole Anderson who came up with this shit. Or Kevin Sullivan or someone. So they weren't going to fire themselves. But they should have. Because these were terrible. But at least the Shockmaster lives on as this great comedic figure. You know, I mean, he's a much bigger star than the Yeti ever was. Can't sell on the Shockmaster. I'm buying him all day long. It's only for a dollar. I wouldn't spend more than that on him. I wouldn't spend more than 50 cents on that helmet. But I can't go against the Shockmaster. Casey from New York City. Buy or sell on who was booked worse. Daniel Bryan from SummerSlam 2013 to WrestleMania 30, or CM Punk in the Summer of Punk up until the Survivor Series. Again, very similar in that I think a lot of the things they did with those two at the time just had you scratching your head, like, why? Why are they doing this? Doesn't make any sense. I'm going to buy on Bryan. I know the payoff was big with Bryan. Main event of WrestleMania won the championship. It makes for a great story looking back on it. But I know at that time, there was no way that they, in their mind, thought, we're sending this guy to the WrestleMania main event to win the championship. And so he won the title, he lost the title on the same night. He won the title again, lost it, like was stripped of it the next day. And then the next time that he and Orton had a match, Shawn kicked him in the face. And he did put Shawn, I think, in a cross face. He got a measure of revenge on him. But, you know, it got you excited. Like, oh, maybe Shawn agreed to come back and wrestle a match against Daniel Bryan. And, of course, he never did. So we never got a match out of it. At least if we got a Shawn Michaels-Daniel Bryan match, it would have been well worth it. We never even got that. And I remember, like, Survivor Series main event that year was, like, Randy Orton and Big Show. They just put Bryan and Punk together because they didn't fucking know what to do with them. Randy Orton and The Big Show in the Survivor Series main event. And then the next pay-per-view, Cena and Orton to merge the two world championships. This is the biggest match in WWE history. Meanwhile, Daniel Bryan is standing in the ring with all the wrestlers and he has an entire build. Now, granted, it was his hometown, but still. All anybody is talking about or chanting is Daniel Bryan's name. It was a complete embarrassment for the company in a lot of ways. To have everybody out there to be building everything around Cena and Orton, and they're chanting this guy's name. This guy, I'm sure they're thinking, this little troll, 5'8", what's so special about him? You got an entire building that can't shut up because they can't stop saying Daniel Bryan. And then what do they do the next month at the Royal Rumble? He loses to Bray Wyatt in the opening match. Great match, but loses to Bray Wyatt, isn't even in the Royal Rumble match. Okay? Because he was never supposed to be. It was all about Batista. Batista's back. So, you know, if we're talking about, like, the booking and the handling of the character, it's not like they had this cohesive plan in their head. We're going to beat him a few times. We're going to build sympathy for this guy. But then we're going to put him in the Royal Rumble. He's going to have this great comeback win the Rumble, and he's going to go on to WrestleMania and win the championship. He should have been in the Rumble, but he wasn't. And a lot of the decisions they made with him at that time in those last few months of 2013 and the beginning of 2014, they were pretty fucking stupid. And I'm glad it worked out in the end, even though he got hurt, so it was a shame that his run got cut, but he got that big WrestleMania moment. They can't ever take that away from him. The payoff was there in the end. Through no effort on their own, it still managed to work out the way that it should have. But the question here is, buy or sell on the booking? Well, I compare that to CM Punk. Let's take a look at CM Punk. Summer of 2011, Summer of Punk, hottest thing in wrestling, beats John Cena for the championship, puts the belt in his fridge, he's off TV for all of a week. Then they bring him back. He gets a second win over John Cena at SummerSlam. But then it becomes all about Kevin Nash. Kevin Nash is coming out on TV every week, powerbombing Punk. No revenge. No retribution. No match. No nothing. So what happened? Punk had a match with Triple H. He lost. Punk had a triple threat match against John Cena and Alberto Del Rio. He lost. Back-to-back pay-per-view losses for a guy who supposedly is the hottest thing in all of wrestling. That's good booking. So yeah, then they do the singles match, because Rock is back, so Rock gets the main event with Cena in a tag match. But they put Punk in there with Del Rio, Punk wins the belt, and yes, he gets 434 days as the champion. In the end, it worked out pretty well for him. But the booking, how he got there, two pay-per-view losses back-to-back, for the hottest star in your entire company, what sense does that make? I'm going to buy on Bryan and sell on Punk just because I think the Bryan thing is far more ridiculous that they couldn't see what was going on here. And, it wasn't until their hand was forced between the reaction to Batista, between Punk walking out. Punk in the end, I mean, Punk helped Bryan out a lot, whether he intended to or not. Had that not happened, Bryan would have gotten his WrestleMania moment. He would have been, again, fifth or sixth down on the card. He admitted that in his book. It's not just speculation. This is how it happened. Bryan himself, I mean, he pulls no punches. He's talked about this before. He didn't understand it any more than I do. So, on the booking, I thought what they did with Bryan, they had this great story handed to them, and they very nearly fucked it all up. So I'm going to buy on that. I'm going to sell on Punk. So that's going to do it for the mailbag questions. One last thing here. We have a sad tweet. This week's sad tweet is from Cage Side Seats. Love Cage Side Seats. It's not anything that they did. They didn't do anything wrong, but it was a tweet that they posted that brought this to my attention the other night. Easily the saddest thing I heard all week, which is that Adam Rose had put up a t-shirt for sale in his store on Pro Wrestling Tees with a picture of his mugshot from his recent domestic violence arrest. And he'll tell you, well, the charges were dropped and all that, of course. Literally a picture of this guy's mugshot. Why anyone would wear a shirt with someone else's mugshot on it? I think someone posted a picture like Johnny Cash had one. All right, Johnny Cash. I would never even think to buy a t-shirt that has someone's mugshot on it. Let alone my own. I think that's stupid to begin with. But the fact that it was for domestic assault, what the hell was this guy thinking? And then he pins it on his wife. He goes on Twitter and says, well, it was her idea. And she wanted to put the mugshot on a wife-beater tank top. And he says, well, no crimes were committed. Charges were dropped. No crimes were committed. Ignoring the fact that this was not the first time that there was a domestic issue here. He neglects to mention that part. Like this was just a case of mistaken identity or something. So about an hour after that tweet was posted, he took the shirt down from the store. It's no longer for sale. In the annals of shittiest ways to market yourself, this has to be near the top of the list. So that's going to do it for this week. That's a fine note to end on here, as we have blown past 2 hours here on this show. A lot going on in wrestling, and there's going to be even more as the draft approaches in the next few weeks. I'm sure we're going to be hearing about some big names maybe that are coming back to WWE, and we'll see how that whole thing plays out. So keep it locked here. We'll be talking about all that stuff. Enjoy Money in the Bank, of course, if you are watching tonight. It's going to be a good one. I think this is going to be a good show. Follow me on Twitter @Solomonster. You can, of course, vote. We'll have a poll up after the pay-per-view tonight. You can vote thumbs up, thumbs down. Also, you can do that after Raw every Monday night. I put the poll up on Twitter, and we routinely have well over 1,000, sometimes as many as 2,000 people who vote in our polls. So I thank you for that. We'll be back with episode 447 next weekend. So until then, be well, stay safe, enjoy the rest of your Father's Day, and we'll see you right back here again for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good,
the bad,
and the ugly.
The Salamonster sounds off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did-you-know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
Salamonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Salamonster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Salamonster sound off.